reminder that the advice offered in this hour is for guidance only. You should always seek your own independent legal opinion. I'll be back next Sunday, 9 p.m. with another LBC Consumer Hour. In the meantime, if you've missed any of tonight's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news and opinion, put your news categories in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 1, it's James Hansen, but next here on LBC, it's Nick Abbott.
Thank you, Dean. A packed programme tonight. We will be talking about Nigel Farage's latest in a long line of claims that an election he lost was lost because the other side cheated. Andy Burnham would have won the Gorton and Denton by-election, says Labour's deputy leader Lucy Powell, in what some might say is a rather unhelpful interjection. We'll check in with our US correspondent for the latest from there. But first, and throughout the evening, more on the consequences of Donald Trump's unilateral declaration of war on a country that America was in the middle of negotiations with on curtailing their nuclear program. Negotiations that reportedly were progressing well right up until the moment the bombs started falling. That and more with me, Nick Abbott, after the new news at 10 on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom. In the last hour, the Prime Minister has said he's giving the US permission to use British bases to attack missile sites and silos in Iran. He's published a statement saying Tehran's approach to military action is becoming even more reckless and dangerous to civilians.
They've hit airports and hotels where British citizens are staying. This is clearly a dangerous situation.
Sir Keir Starmer says the UK took a deliberate decision to stay out of the US-Israeli military action against the Islamic Republic, but he's now saying current events mean a change is required.
Iran is striking British interests nonetheless and putting British people at huge risk, along with our allies across the region. That is the situation we face today. Our partners in the Gulf have asked us to do more to defend them, and it is my duty to protect British lives.
At the same time, President Trump has issued a new statement this evening as well. He's been speaking after the news that three US military personnel have been killed in action since operations began on Saturday morning. And he said Washington would complete its mission against the Islamic Republic at full force.
America will avenge their deaths and deliver the most punishing blow to the terrorists who have waged war against basically civilization. They have waged war against civilization itself. Our resolve, and likewise that of Israel, has never been stronger.
Eight of the countries which make up the petrol cartel OPEC say they will increase the production of crude oil in the face of instability in the Middle East. It says production will increase by more than 200,000 barrels a day during April. More on the situation in the Middle East throughout the next few hours with Nick Abbott here on LBC. In other news this evening, the operators of an aerodrome in Devon are saying a skydiver who died there over the weekend was an experienced jumper. The 49-year-old was pronounced dead at Dunkerswell Aerodrome near Honiton on Saturday. And in the Premier League during today, Arsenal are now 5 points clear at the top of the table following a 2-1 victory over Chelsea. Tottenham lost 2-1 at Fulham, and Nottingham Forest were beaten by Brighton. LBC weather, wet and windy for Northern Ireland and much of Scotland overnight. Those conditions will then spread into Wales and the west of England, although clear spells will develop elsewhere. We'll see a low of around 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
Good evening. You just heard a bit of Keir Starmer's statement. I'll give you it in full. He said, "Yesterday I spoke to you about the situation in the Gulf and explained that the United Kingdom was not involved in the strikes on Iran. That remains the case. Over the last 2 days, Iran has launched sustained attacks across the region at countries who did not attack them. They've hit airports and hotels where British citizens were staying. This is clearly a dangerous situation. We have at least 200,000 British citizens in the region, residents, families on holiday, and those in transit. I ask all our people in the region to please register your presence and follow the Foreign Office travel advice. I know this is a deeply worrying time, and we will continue to do all we can to support you. Our armed forces who are located across the region are also being put at risk by Iran's actions. Yesterday, Iran hit a military base in Bahrain, narrowly missing British personnel. The death of the supreme leader will not stop Iran from launching these strikes. Their approach is becoming even more reckless and more dangerous to civilians. Our decision that the UK would not be involved with the strikes on Iran was deliberate, not least because we believe that the best way forward for the region and for the world is a negotiated settlement. In one in which Iran agrees to give up any aspirations to develop a nuclear weapon. But Iran is striking British interests nonetheless and putting British people at huge risk along with our allies across the region. That is the situation we face today. Our partners in the Gulf have asked us to do more to defend them, and it is my duty to protect British lives. We have British jets in the air as part of coordinated defensive operations, which have already successfully intercepted Iranian strikes. But the only way to stop the threat is to destroy the missiles at source, in their storage depots, or the launchers with which they are used to fire the missiles. The United States has requested permission to use British bases for that specific and limited defensive purpose. We have taken the decision to accept this request to prevent Iran firing missiles across the region, killing innocent civilians, putting British lives at risk, and hitting countries that have not been involved. The basis of our decision is the collective self-defense of long-standing friends and allies and protecting British lives. This is in accordance with international law, and we are publishing a summary of our legal advice. We're not joining these strikes, but we will continue with our defensive actions in the region, and we will also bring experts from Ukraine, together with our own experts, to help Gulf partners shoot down Iranian drones attacking them. I want to be very clear. We all remember the mistakes of Iraq, and we have learned those lessons. We were not involved in the initial strikes on Iran, and we will not join offensive action now. But Iran is pursuing a scorched earth strategy, so we are supporting the collective self-defense of our allies and our people in the region, because that is our duty to the British people. It's the best way to eliminate the urgent threat and prevent the situation spiraling further. This is the British government protecting British interests and British lives. That's the statement from Keir Starmer. Donald Trump released a statement. I'll precis that for you in a short while. Sir Mark Lyle Grant is the former UK ambassador to the UN and national security advisor to the Prime Minister, and he joins us on the line now. Good evening, Sir Mark.
Good evening, Nick.
What's your response to Keir Starmer's statement?
Well, I think it's a logical step, because it's quite clear that given Iran's response to this attack, which is pretty indiscriminate, I mean, they're firing at all the countries they can reach in the region, where there are a number of British bases, a number of military personnel, not to mention 5,000 British companies, 250,000 British nationals, and people who are caught up in transit at the various airports in Dubai and Doha, etc., that you can make a very strong legal case for saying, we are now responding to a request from our allies in the Gulf, collective defense, that makes it legal under international law, and we will therefore do everything we can to try and stop these attacks. And one way to do that is to allow the Americans to use British bases to deploy heavy bombers. Because although the Americans have this huge armada in the region, two aircraft carriers can't hold big bombers. They can only hold fighter aircraft, ground attack aircraft. So if they want to use big heavy bombers, they've either got to come from Europe or they've got to come from the United States. But of course, now that we have given this signal to them that they can use Diego Garcia, they can use the bases in the UK, it's going to be much easier for the Americans to bring to bear heavy bombing equipment on missile bases, nuclear facilities, etc.
So what's the difference then between allowing the Americans to use our facilities to bomb Iran and bombing Iran?
Well, in legal terms, there isn't any difference. And that's why Keir Starmer decided not to allow America to use Diego Garcia or British based bases in the UK to launch offensive operations against Iran, because he felt that that was not in accordance with international law. Precisely because to allow that to happen in legal terms is no different from doing it yourself.
Well, yes, precisely. So why change his mind?
Well, because of the fact that now you can argue that these are defensive actions, because Iran is striking countries that haven't attacked them, like the United Arab Emirates and Qatar and Bahrain and Saudi Arabia, etc. So they were not involved in the attacks on Iran, but they are being attacked by Iran, and therefore they are allowed to respond, and they're allowed to call on their allies to help them respond. So it is a different situation. I mean, personally, I think one could have made a legal case to allow America to use Diego Garcia in an offensive operation from the start, but you know, clearly the government's legal advice was that wasn't possible, but that advice has obviously changed in the last 24 hours.
Yeah, do you think that the Iranians are going to make a differentiation in our position before and after Keir Starmer allowed America to use our bases to launch attacks on them?
Probably not. I mean, their backs are against the wall now, the Iranians, and they are lashing out in all directions they can. So they will attack all the sort of countries that they feel are their enemies, and that's always included the United Kingdom. So to be honest, I don't think in terms of the risk to British forces or British nationals, or indeed as a terrorist target, I don't think it makes any difference, this decision. But of course, it will be welcome to the American administration, and it'll be welcome to many of our Gulf allies.
Yeah, well, as far as the Americans are concerned, it's not even clear whether Donald Trump has the authority to have launched any of this. So we might be actually enabling, another war crime, essentially.
Well, no, because the government took the decision not to enable that when it was an offensive operation. Now it's a defensive operation in respect of our own defence and our allies' defence. Then that does strengthen, very much strengthen, and potentially completely change the international legal position. So I don't think there is any risk of this being against international law, whereas there was a risk that many people would say it was against international law if they had allowed Diego Garcia and the British bases to be used for the first offensive action by either Israel or the United States.
But is it going to make it more likely that the Iranians will decide to attack us? I mean, it's possible that the Prime Minister said that Iran hit a military base in Bahrain, narrowly missing British personnel. Well, it's possible that the Iranians weren't targeting British personnel, and neither were they doing so when they hit Dubai, for instance. It's just that British people happened to be there. Is it more likely that they are going to put a target on us now because of what the Prime Minister has just said?
Well, I think in terms of the longer term or the medium term terrorist threat, then clearly that is a risk. And I'm sure the government's looking at the question of the terror threat levels, etc., in the United Kingdom. But that's, you know, a little few days down the road, as it were. I think in terms of the immediate region, in terms of the military personnel, the British civilians in the region, I don't think this decision will fundamentally change their threat level. It's very high now, as you say, without targeting British nationals. Some have been only narrowly missed, as it were. There's been a French base that's been a hit in the region, despite the fact that France hasn't been involved in these attacks at all either. So I think those, as far as the Iranians are concerned, these are all legitimate targets at the moment already, and Keir Starmer's decision will not make any difference to that.
But do you think his decision is a step towards us joining in with America and Israel in a sort of an all-out assault with and including, you know, British boots on the ground?
No, I wouldn't expect that at all. I think that's most unlikely and virtually impossible. Look, it's fair to say that it's very uncertain where this conflict will go. Clearly, huge damage has been done to the Iranian military capability. The leadership has been killed, but the regime succession seems to be underway. There isn't any sign of a popular uprising, which is clearly what President Trump is calling for. And there are increasing casualties, including of Americans, you know, in the region, not to mention civilians in Iran. Ships are being hit. You know, the Straits of Hormuz are blocked with ships not going through. The airspace is closed with airports closed across the Middle East. There have been demonstrations around the world, some violent in places like Baghdad and Karachi and Kashmir. So, you know, this thing is far from over and one can never be certain where it will go. But I do not anticipate any circumstances in which there would be British boots on the ground in Iran, no.
That is a difficult thing, though, isn't it? Where will this go? Do you get the sense that the Americans even have an idea of where this might go, what a plan is, what a good end to this might be, or are they just lobbing bombs in and seeing what happens?
Well, I think that is an issue of great concern, particularly to European governments, because President Trump said, you know, just today that he was going to continue until all the objectives were achieved. We were ahead of schedule, but we don't actually know what those final objectives are. It's clear that he wants regime change, but history shows us you can't get regime change just by an air campaign, and there's no sign of that happening at the moment. Of course, that could change. So where is the end game as far as the Americans are concerned? I can see from the Israeli point of view, it's a win-win situation. They don't mind whether there's a, you know, a democracy or a chaos in Iran. They're achieving their military aims and making themselves safer. But it's not clear to me what the American aims are and where the American interests lie in pursuing this campaign.
Well, that's really alarming because we're joining a war with no idea what the objectives are.
Well, our objectives in what Keir Starmer said are very limited, that they are to prevent, you know, a defensive action to prevent being attacked ourselves and our allies being attacked by this random missile and drone attacks from Iran. So that is a limited and defensive objective that's pretty clear. Going beyond that, the Americans are clearly going beyond that because they're involved in offensive operations and they started this conflict after all. And their objectives, I think, are still very unclear and all President Trump's interventions over the weekend haven't clarified them.
Keir Starmer said, our decision that the UK would not be involved with the strikes in Iran was deliberate, not least because we believe the best way forward for the region and for the world is a negotiated settlement. Am I right in thinking that the Americans and the Iranians were in the midst of a negotiated settlement with Oman being the go-between, and the Omani negotiators seemed to think that everything was going particularly well until, for no apparent reason to them, as far as I'm aware, Donald Trump said, no, this is not good enough. I mean, they'd already agreed, apparently, to zero stockpiling of enriched uranium. Zero stockpiling. They agreed to downblend existing stockpiles to the lowest possible level. They agreed to convert them into irreversible fuel. They agreed to full IAEA verification with potential U.S. inspector access. They agreed to never, ever possess nuclear material for a bomb. The Omani negotiator said, I have worked in diplomacy for 7 years. I've never seen a country agree to this many things this quickly. And Donald Trump's response was, not happy with the pace, and started the bombing.
Yeah, I mean, the list you read out, I mean, is basically the 2015 joint
yes.
plan of action that President Trump ripped up in his first term.
Right.
And I think where the talks broke down is not actually on the nuclear file itself, but on the fact that the Iranians continued to refuse to discuss their missile capability and their influence in the region, or their support for proxy terrorist operations in the region, as the West would see it. So that is really where the breakdown was, not on the nuclear file, which is extremely technical, and it sounds as though some good progress had indeed been made. Look, the Israelis are very important in this because quite clearly they never liked the 2015 deal. They were the ones who persuaded Netanyahu, persuaded President Trump in his first term to rip it up, despite the Europeans, you know, trying to persuade him to keep it going. It was Netanyahu who torpedoed that, and he would not have been happy with the fact that a deal was being done in Geneva. And I think he has been influential in persuading President Trump to join Israel in this latest bombing campaign.
Russia has already released a statement about this. It's a bit difficult to take lectures on international law from Vladimir Putin.
Indeed.
China is also in Iran's camp. What can you foresee of the involvement of those two countries?
Well, I don't think they're likely to get closely involved. Certainly Iran won't. I mean, Russia is less certain because Iran is helping Russia, or has been helping Russia in its campaign in Ukraine. But it was striking when they had an emergency UN Security Council meeting last night. The only countries really to support Iran were Russia, China and Pakistan. You know, all the other countries, what you might call the neutral countries, the global south, the Gulf countries, Bahrain is on the council, you know, were very critical of the Iranian reaction. So they're in a different position, it's true. But I don't think China will get involved in any substantial way at all. And I just don't think Russia's in a position to do much, given its problems in Ukraine.
The Saudis said that they're going to increase the production of oil in order to mitigate any loss of traffic through the Strait of Hormuz. But doesn't their oil go through that strait?
Most of it does. Of course, it can go from the other side in terms of the Red Sea rather than through the Gulf of through the Straits of Hormuz. So there are two options there for the Saudis. And it's also worth bearing in mind that the United States is not affected by that because the United States is now self-sufficient in terms of oil and gas. But it will have an effect probably on the price of oil, even if the Saudis and others ramp up their production. I don't think there's any way to avoid some increase in the oil price.
Very good to talk to you, Sir Mark. Thank you so much for your time. That's Sir Mark Lyle-Grant, former UK ambassador to the UN and national security advisor to the Prime Minister from 2015 to 2017. So what do you make of this, then? We are not where we were last night, where Keir Starmer insisted that we had absolutely no part to play in any of this. We have inched forward a bit. What do you make of that? 0345 6060 973. You can text 84850. Email nicka@lbc.co.uk. If you're on WhatsApp, it's the same number as the phone. 0345 6060 973.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
This is Taxation Without Representation.
Straight to the point.
You get giddy with all these U-turns.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Lucky he gets up in the morning, really, isn't it?
Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
Wrong tool for the job? Don't make that mistake with your van. Get up to 30% off selected new Toyota vans and pickups with a warranty up to 10 years or 100,000 miles with every qualifying routine service. Visit your nearest Toyota centre or visit toyota.co.uk/van savings for more details. Savings on selected vans and pickups ordered by the 31st of March 2026. UK residents. See toyota.co.uk for full details. T's and C's apply.
Chase is the digital bank that boosts your savings to 4.5% AER variable.
A boost?
Yep. It includes a 2.25% AER boost for the first 12 months.
Are they being boosted now?
All the time. Bedtime, gym time, romantic dinner time. And soon you could boost your way to...
Beach time.
Boost your savings with Chase. Search Chase Boosted Saver. 18 plus UK residents available to new Chase current account customers for their first 31 days. 4.41% gross interest paid monthly. Eligibility and T's and C's apply.
At TfO, we're opening up more of London for everyone with step-free access. We're continuing to improve accessibility at many of our stations, and now over 200 stations and counting have step-free access, including the entire Elizabeth Line, DLR and all tram stops. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
This is LBC with Nick Abbott. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
So I gave you Keir Starmer's statement. I'll give you Donald Trump's statement. He's put out a statement on his own social media site. I won't read all of it. Much of it is about how huge and tremendous and great he is. It says, over the past 36 hours, the United States and its partners have launched Operation Epic Fury, one of the largest, most complex, most overwhelming military offensive the world has ever seen. Nobody has seen anything like it. We have hit hundreds of targets in Iran, including Revolutionary Guard facilities, Iranian air defense systems. Iran's formerly supreme leader Ayatollah Khomeini is dead. The entire military command is gone as well, and many of them want to surrender into saving their lives. They want immunity. They're calling by the thousands. Combat operations continue at this time in full force, and they will continue until all of our objectives are achieved. We have very strong objectives. They would have done something 2 weeks ago, but they just couldn't get there. Earlier today, CENTCOM shared the news that three U.S. military service members have been killed in action. As one nation, we grieve for the true American patriots who have made the ultimate sacrifice for our nation. And sadly, there will likely be more before it ends. That's the way it is. Likely to be more, but we'll do everything possible where that won't be the case. They have waged a war against civilization itself. Our resolve, and likewise that of Israel, has never been stronger. America is now again the richest, most powerful nation in the world by far. But the only reason we enjoy the quality of life that we do and the freedom and security is we have done things that others are unable to do. But it's because of warriors who are willing to lay down their lives to do battle with our enemies, and they do battle better than anybody. The United States is the strongest military the world has ever seen. I rebuilt our military in my first term. There's never been a military like we possess, and frankly, there's nobody even close. We are the world's greatest and most powerful nation, so we can do something about what they do. These intolerable threats will not continue any longer. I once again urge the Revolutionary Guard, the Iranian military police, to lay down your arms and receive full immunity or face certain death. It will be certain. Death won't be pretty. I call upon all Iranian patriots who yearn for freedom to seize this moment to be brave, be bold, be heroic, and take back your country. That's who we're following. Any thoughts? 0345 6060 973. Oxford, Leah.
Hello, hi.
Yes, sir.
How are you doing?
Very well, thanks.
Not earlier on, the gentleman that was on, he made a comment about Iran attacking other Arab countries.
Mm-hmm.
That, why we kind of lay the path for them to do that. America attacked Iran first, totally and utterly illegally. So does that not play any part in it?
Well, it's what started it.
Sorry?
It's what started it.
Well, then they've got a right to self-defense, have they not? I'm not condoning bombing.
Yeah, but attacking countries that didn't attack them is not self-defense.
Attacking countries? What are American air bases doing over there?
Hosting American military. I don't understand what the question means.
You don't understand what the question. How many air bases does Pakistan or any other India have around the UK? Or anywhere else in the world, for that matter?
What, zero? Certainly here. Question. I don't know about anywhere else.
No, but that's what I mean, my friend. What gives America the authority to go and police the world on their own terms? Not even with the world on its side. I'm not condoning.
America has military bases in other countries because those other countries have invited them to have them there. They haven't taken over those countries.
I don't know about invites, my friend. It's just that, not to be rude or anything, you do a very, very good job. But the system in the world needs a change. The media is just not allowed to speak the truth.
Right. Well, what?
That's the feeling I get.
Okay, well, I don't understand what the truth is in this regard, but that beeping in the background is somewhat annoying, so I'm going to leave it there. But thanks a lot, Leah. 0345-6060-973. Sarah says, I am outraged by this decision. I have no democratic say in. He has put our country, Britain, at risk to help Israel and America. Starmer has made our country a target now and involved us in an attack on Iran. Well, Keir Starmer is at pains to say that he is not involved in an attack on Iran. He is involved in protecting British interests in the region from an attack on Iran. But I'm not sure that the Iranians would necessarily detect a thin line between the one and the other. Let's see if I... Well, maybe I can't squeeze one in before the news. I'll come to it after. Ed says, it's only a few short months ago since Trump insulted British and other troops who fought beside them in Afghanistan, claiming that nobody helped the US. That's true. At the first opportunity since those insults, the UK bends over backwards to help the US fight its war, and all under the pretense that these will just be defensive attacks. When did the UK become so supine? Well, there must have been a date. I can't think of when it was off the top of my head, but the moment that people started talking about a special relationship was probably exactly when that was. We think that there's a special relationship. The Americans have no idea what we're talking about, or certainly don't act as though they do. 0345 6060 973. You can text 84850, email nicka@lbc.co.uk. And if you are on WhatsApp, it's the same number as the phone. I'm going to take a short break for the news. I'm going to come to your calls later in this hour and throughout the evening. But just after the break, Andy Burnham would have won, Gorton and Denton if Starmer had let him stand, claims the Labour Deputy Leader, Lucy Powell. We'll be talking about that next. It's 10:30 on LBC, the news headlines with Tim Daly.
The Prime Minister has said he's giving the US permission to use British bases to attack missile sites and silos in Iran. He's published a statement saying Tehran's approach to military action is becoming even more reckless and dangerous to civilians. President Trump has also issued a new statement this evening. It's come after the news that three US military personnel have been killed in action since operations began on Saturday morning. And eight of the countries which make up the petrol cartel OPEC say they will increase the production of crude oil in the face of the instability in the Middle East. It says production will rise by more than 200,000 barrels a day during April. LBC weather, wet and windy for Northern Ireland and much of Scotland overnight. Those conditions will then move into Wales and Western England, but the rest of the country should see clear spells and will have a low of around 7 degrees.
This is LBC.
Close your eyes. Take a deep breath and come on in to Classic FM Calm, LBC's soothing sister station. Find peace in the music with Classic FM Calm. Listen on Global Player or ask your smart speaker to play Classic FM Calm.
Everything dinner at Ocado. Save on sausages, tinned tomatoes, and get a great price on garlic. Then splurge on the fancy pasta. The kind you know you're pronouncing wrong, which means it must be good. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Select lines only, geographical restrictions, minimum spend and charges apply. Offers end 24th of March. Terms and offer info at ocado.com/terms.
How big's the job? Compact and nimble? That's the Vauxhall combo. A bit of everything? Meet the award-winning Vivaro. Or is it a load-it-all job? That's Movano. Whatever the job, there's a Vauxhall van for it. Right now, during the Vauxhall Pro Days van event, until the 16th of March, you can save £750 off any new Vauxhall van, electric or diesel, on top of all other offers. Search Vauxhall van range. Business users only, 18 plus, £750 excluding VAT. T's and C's apply, search Vauxhall van range.
It's not easy being a clamp stuck on the wheel of the one person on the street who didn't tax their car. Yeah, Graham at number 7, I'm talking about you. Bet the neighbourhood group chat is as well. Wish I had a group chat. Maybe I can chat to myself.
Hi, Clampy. How's it going?
Not great, Clampy. Being clamped to the only untaxed car for miles is so lonely.
Over 98% of drivers tax their vehicle on time. Tax it. Don't risk it. Visit gov.uk/DVLA/taxit.
Bring your pensions together into one easy-to-manage online plan with PensionBee. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
More of your calls on the developments in the Middle East in this hour and throughout the evening on LBC. But let's take a pause for the moment and talk about what might have happened if Andy Burnham ran in the Gorton and Denton by-election, because Labour's deputy leader said that Andy Burnham would have won the Gorton and Denton by-election for them. Lucy Powell said that the Greater Manchester mayor would probably have held the seat, and that if he had stood, the Greens would not have gone after the seat in the same way that they did. Well, let's talk about this with Joe Twyman. Joe is the co-founder of Delta Poll and joins us on the line now. Hello, Joe.
Good evening.
Is there much point in saying this now? It's been rather unhelpful, don't you think?
Well, I guess it depends on what it is you're trying to achieve by saying it. If you're wanting to launch a discussion, perhaps quite a serious academic discussion, about the various counterfactuals that could be explored around the by-election voting, then it's not much use, because we don't know what the result would have been. We can speculate, but it is just speculation. If, however, you're looking to make a particular political point about Andy Burnham's popularity, if you're looking to perhaps niggle a bit to the to those Starmer supporters who prevented Burnham from running in the first place, then this is an opportunity to do that. And if you're looking to put a bit of stick about, put the cat amongst the pigeons, then this is an opportunity to do that. I don't think, however, it's something that reasonably could have been expected.
Yes, I mean, Andy Burnham was elected the mayor of Manchester. The people of Manchester wanted him to be their mayor. They didn't want him to hop off to take a tilt at another job. He still had 2.5 years to serve. And he told the Manchester voters, "I won't let you down." And then, if he had been allowed to, he would have done.
Yes, well, I mean, you could have a debate about whether that sort of manoeuvre, which of course is one that the Boris Johnson pulled, whether it's necessarily the kind of thing that actually gets picked up in by-election voting. I think the bigger problem was the fact that Labour, generally speaking, were unpopular, which is why their vote share in just 18 months halved in this by-election. And though Andy Burnham himself is personally popular, I think that what you're saying is generally correct, that this would have been seen as a cynical move. But I don't think any of that gets away from the fact that the Greens did extremely well. And yes, they might not have approached this election in quite the same way, though we don't know. But I think given their performance, and given the fact that, generally speaking, governments in power simply don't win by-elections, I think to suggest that there would have been in any way a guaranteed different outcome is just not backed up by any kind of evidence or data.
Yeah, do you think that Andy Burnham actually dodged a bullet there? Because I know that people, when they vote in a local election, they vote for their MP, but that's not really what people have in mind when they go and vote. They vote for the leader of the party, the person that represents the party that they put the cross next to. And so it's entirely likely that Burnham would have given up the Manchester mayor position to lose at this by-election. And then what?
Well, that of course is the key questions. Some people do vote entirely on national issues. Some people vote entirely on local issues. By-elections are strange and unusual and have unique circumstances all to their own. But most people vote for a combination of the two. And it is possible that Andy Burnham running a sort of anti-Keir Starmer campaign, an anti-National Labour campaign, might have done better. I'm sure he would have improved on Labour's position. They might well have come second. They might even have won. But I think the most likely option is they still would have lost to the Greens, and then that would have left a vacant mayor of Manchester position that could quite easily have been won by another party other than Labour. And so if you were Keir Starmer or his team looking to justify the decision to deny Andy Burnham, you would say this is precisely why, because we didn't want to lose the by-election and potentially the mayoralty as well.
Labour won a landslide of seats at the last general election, but not a landslide of votes. They took only 33% of the vote, and they're now 11 percentage points down on that score. Is that very unusual for a mid-term government? Because under Boris Johnson, he lost half of his voters towards the end of his premiership. It was about 50%. of the votes that he got in 2019 had disappeared by the time that he was encouraged to exit 10 Downing Street.
Yeah, I mean, midterm blues are not unusual. We had a situation in the past where Margaret Thatcher, for instance, was the most unpopular prime minister since records began and came back to win a general election. John Major was very unpopular and came back to win a general election before becoming even more unpopular and losing. And so it's not the case that that these things are completely unheard of. But what was without precedent was the, if you like, the width of Labour's victory without the depth. So you win in a lot of constituencies, but you, your share of the vote is relatively low. And next time around, and it's worth pointing out that the next general election doesn't have to be for 3 years, and it was just over 3 years ago that Boris Johnson was talking about his plans for a third term in Downing Street. So 3 years is a long time in politics. But within 3 years, it's perfectly possible that we could see four, five parties competing in individual constituencies. And then you could have a situation where it's actually possible to win on an even lower share of the vote. You could win individual constituencies on 20-25% of the vote, and so we could see an even narrower victory last time, and it makes the whole situation more unpredictable because essentially everything is up for grabs.
Yes, it's quite likely that the next government is going to be a coalition of sorts, isn't it?
Well, we simply don't know. As I say, three years is a long time, and in that time, it's perfectly possible that one party could gradually improve their position. The Reform Party, for instance, could turn around the more recent slight decline that we've seen and grow their lead over other parties, and that would place them in a good position. The first past the post system is very generous to parties in certain situations and very ungenerous to them in others, and those circumstances are, it's too difficult to say whether those circumstances will play out or not. It's perfectly possible that Labour could turn things around within 3 years. As I said, it's a long period of time, and you never know, we may even see the revival of the Conservative Party or the Lib Dems doing something. I mean, if the last 10 to 15 years of British politics have taught us anything, it's that nothing can be guaranteed, but at the same time, nothing can be ruled out.
Yes, and of course a lot of people are saying, well, the way to revivify the fortunes of the Labour Party is to change the leader, but the nation grew tired of the musical chairs nature of the constant switching of leader under the Tories. Why repeat that?
Well, it's a difficult question. It effectively is rolling the dice. And in the words of the great political philosopher John Bon Jovi, you live for the fight when that's all that you've got. And if your only option is, as you see it, to change leader, then that may be something that you risk. And actually, you only need to look at the Green Party and how it's fortunes have been revived and indeed significantly improved by the election of a new leader, someone significantly, I think most people would admit, significantly more charismatic, interesting and charming, and certainly media savvy than previous leaders that party had. And that's no criticism of the previous leaders, it's just that Zap Polanski is clearly a very different personality. The difficulty that Labour have is that there is no obvious person sitting in the wings who could fly in and save the party. People have talked about Andy Burnham, but as we have said, he is not an MP at the moment, and he has tried for the leadership on two previous occasions and lost. And so we have a very complicated situation for Labour, because as you quite rightly said, it didn't do the Conservatives much good to chop and change their leader either. Whoever is in Downing Street will have the levers of power available to them, but as a result will have an expectation among the electorate that change needs to be delivered. And that change needs to be something that the public perceive to be an improvement on the important issues in this country, most notably the cost of living and the economy more generally, but also everything from immigration, taxation, education, the NHS, etc., etc., etc. It doesn't matter whether it's Keir Starmer or another Labour leader. That challenge remains for whoever it is.
And finally, Donald Trump, I suspect, is putting this in his thoughts, that a little light war usually does in an enormous amount for a leader's popularity as the country, stands behind him or her and supports our troops overseas. Do you think that such a bump is likely with what's happening now?
Well, the bump that comes from war is very, very complicated because it tends to rely on the outcome. We certainly do not know what the outcome is in across the whole of the Middle East generally or in Iran specifically at the moment. So it's not possible to know whether there will be a lasting benefit or not. And what you tend to find is that, yes, you can get a bump from that, but if it's not backed up by economic improvements as well, you have people saying, well, why are we spending money on this? And it can count against you. The Falklands factor, as it was called, is often mentioned as something that turned Margaret Thatcher's popularity around in the 1980s. But actually, when you look at that in more detail, what that was actually doing was building on a much improved economic situation. So it does help to have both. And Donald Trump certainly doesn't have much in the way of that. And when the stock market opens tomorrow in New York, he may find that that situation has deteriorated, which in turn may damage his popularity, given how much stock, if you pardon the expression, he has placed on the New York Stock Exchange numbers and the Dow Jones increases as part of his policy. So it remains to be seen. It is very early days, and again, another roll of the dice.
Very good to talk to you, Joe. Thanks so much for your time. Joe Twyman, co-founder of DeltaPol. So we're going to be talking about the events in Iran and our apparently increasing participation in that, and your thoughts about what is happening and what might happen in the future. 0345 6060 973.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
This is Taxation Without Representation.
Straight to the point.
You get giddy with all these U-turns.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Lucky he gets up in the morning, really, isn't it?
Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
If you were missold a home on a holiday park, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive compensation. Text ADVICE to 78900.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. No medical questions and a cash payout. Search Sunlight Cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payout. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
JP Morgan Personal Investing gives you the clarity to make more informed decisions on your investments. Which is great, because right now, something else just became crystal clear. Your kid just outgrew the kids menu. Now he's ordering a truffle gnocchi? You consider making a don't gnocchi it till you try it joke, but now's not the time. Now's the time to grow his world, one bite at a time. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
My name's Mark, and this is my NHS story. The sensation in my neck was painful all the time. Once I spoke to my GP, they referred me to my CDC. They got me in very, very quickly. The amount of pain I went through for something so easy, why hadn't I done this 4 months before?
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at Ocado.com.
Leading Britain's conversation. Nick Abbott. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
As a possible indication as to why we are here, in 2011, a man said this: our president will start a war with Iran because he has absolutely no ability to negotiate. He's weak and he is ineffective, so the only way he figures that he's going to get re-elected and as sure as you're sitting there, is to start a war with Iran. And the speaker was Donald Trump talking about Barack Obama. Ealing, Masood.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Good, man. Yeah, I was listening to your radio from yesterday since the started attacking the Iran. Obviously, I'm Iranian. And some of your non-Iranian guests, they come and they say that what Donald Trump does is not right and he's breaking the international law and all that stuff.
Mm.
But we as Iranian, we love what he does. He's attacking our country. I know that's the weird feeling that you see something like that and you feel happy.
Yeah.
But this is the only way that you can get rid of these government. They've been there for 47 years old. Every single Friday, on a Friday pray, they were saying death to America, death to Israel, death to England. And obviously, when they have a nuclear bomb, they're going to do something. And this is the only way, by attacking them, by killing them, that you can get rid of them. So if you have to break the law, let's break the law. It doesn't matter. We Iranian who are against this Islamic Republic, we support Donald Trump to the end, and we are backing him up.
Right, but is he going to support you is the thing. Just lobbing bombs in and killing people is not going to affect a change in the regime.
Yes, I know that. And we know that, obviously, he's not coming here to do Iranian people a favor. He says that, but he does this for his own benefit. I don't know what his benefit is. I'm not good at politics. Maybe he's after oil or he's after whatever he is. But that's the only way that he can help us to reach our whatever we want to get.
But it seems unlikely that aerial bombardment is going to affect a regime change. I'm no historian, but I don't think that there is any regime change that has ever been affected by...
It won't change the regime change.
So how is it going to happen then?
You see, they killed the supreme leader.
Yeah.
So that gives braveness to the people.
Isn't the supreme leader just going to get replaced by somebody exactly like him?
Yeah, but the power that the people get in their heart and they can go and they change the things.
Right, but they tried that and they got machine gunned in the street.
Yeah, I know, but now they're more brave. Now they can do more. As you can see, they come with the different flag into the street of Tehran and they start dancing after he died, but they never did that before, but now they do.
Do you think
they don't scared anymore? They know they're gonna die. They don't scared. They come to the street and they start dancing and they say death to dictator and they. By America attacking the government, by killing the high ranking general in Iran, the Iranian people, they get more stronger and they can obviously they are the only power that they can change the government, not America. They come in for their own benefit.
But do the people of Iran have access to arms, though? Because that's what they're going to need. Because the military, at least up to this point, they seem to be siding with, well, they are siding with the regime.
Well, they can go to the police, station and all that. They can be armed, yeah.
The police would act against the military on behalf of the Iranian people who want to overthrow the government?
Say that again?
Are you saying that the police, go on.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying people in Iran, they don't have any guns, they don't have any weapon to fight the police. But they can be armed. Exactly same 47 years ago. How did they become armed? They attack the police stations, they attack the places that they've been holding the guns and stuff, and they become armed.
That's a pretty tall order to ask people without arms to attack those that are armed with weapons of war, essentially.
It is, but when you're in that situation, when you're there, it's different than when you're here and you talk about it.
Yeah. Okay, good talking to you, Masood. Thanks for that. 0345-6060-973. John says Starmer won't get any credit for anything. That's a given. However, on this, he has played a blinder. And if you missed the start of the programme, the position of Keir Starmer has changed somewhat. He was at pains to point out that we had absolutely nothing to do with the original strikes. Now he is saying that because Iran has struck back at many targets, some of which have affected British citizens, that he is going to allow the Americans to use British bases to launch their attacks from, and you know, assist them in that manner. And he appears certain that this is in accordance with international law. I'm not sure whether it is or isn't going to make any difference to the Iranians. Camden, hello, Sandy.
Yeah, hi, yeah. Can Sandy. You hear me okay?
Yes, go ahead. Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to be very straight on the matter. This is not England's concern. We should not be, regardless of our being allies with America and all the rest of it, we should not be getting involved in this matter. This is not England's business to get involved in anything about Iran's regime change. And by doing so, war is not the answer. No one's thinking this through. All these people who are in charge of these nation states are not thinking this thing through. I mean, Trump is just thinking this is a board game of war games, and it's just a nonsense. And on top of that, with people in this country who are saying, oh, Starmer this, Starmer that, who should be getting involved, if this continues, which I believe is illegal what is happening in that country anyway, through this so-called attack in Iran, is people in this country who say, oh, Starmer should get involved, da-da-da, we should be, he's right now to host whatever needs to be hosted for Israel and America, you know, whatever he's agreed upon. If this continues and more civilians on the ground in that country gets killed, there's a risk to this country of us getting attacked at any time. And we don't know if it could be domestic, even in home base. We don't know that. And on top of that, I want to say to people who jump on the immigration bandwagon, if this continues, and then you've got a big issue coming to this country about fleeing for asylum and everything else, are they going to have open arms? Will there be open arms in this country to allow a lot of refugees here? Okay?
It seems inevitable that there will be a large number of people who will want to leave Iran.
Thank you.
And they won't all come here, as some people who, you know, want to sow division and hatred would tell you. They will probably mostly go to their whichever neighbouring country allows them, but some will come to Europe, and a small trickle will come here. And as I think you're implying, the very same people who are constantly railing against immigration are with their call for us to get stuck into a war are going to cause the very thing that they profess to be concerned about. All right, good talking to you, Sandy. Thanks for that. 0345-6060-973. Clacton, hello, Ben.
Hello, Nick. Yes, you mentioned earlier about, I watched the interview for the Oman's foreign minister on American television, and he said exactly as what you said, you quoted it pretty well, and they even agreed, according to him on the television, they even agreed to allow American inspectors in, which they've never done before.
Yeah.
So they had everything they wanted. As far as Trump was concerned, it was all about nuclear. It wasn't anything to do with changing the government in Iran. And of course, he had this meeting with the vice president, and it was presented to Trump, and he rejected it.
Trump said, not happy with the pace. And the Omani diplomat, who was the go-between, said that he had never seen a country agree to so much so quickly.
Yes.
Talking about Iran.
He gave them everything they could possibly want. And Hamas and the other terrorist group has been neutralized now because there's a peace agreement. So there wasn't any other reason. Every country has a right to defend itself with missiles or wherever they are, defensive or otherwise. I've no truck with the regime. It was a nasty regime. But then again, it's an independent country, and they're breaking every international law you can think of. And they just were determined to attack Iran, no matter what. If the Iranians had offered them half of Iran with the oil, they wouldn't accept that either, because they wanted to attack Iran. And that was all it was about.
It does seem as though that was the intention, regardless of whatever happened with the talks between the US and Iran in Amman, that Trump wasn't going to be happy with anything they offered, because they offered him pretty much everything,
yes.
And he still wasn't happy. So it seems like he'd already made his mind up that that's what he wanted to do. And the question is, why did he want to do it? Because, I mean, it's very important that we determine what his intentions are, because we are now joining him, at least superficially, perhaps,
yes.
Initially. But if we don't know where this is going, where he thinks the off-ramp is, what the actual the plan is, or even if he has one, then that is quite alarming. All right, good talking to you, Ben. Thanks for that. 03-45-6060-973. Keep your calls coming in. We are going to be talking about evacuation plans for stranded British travellers in the Middle East. If you are listening in while you are stranded in the Middle East, then do make a call. 03-45-6060-973.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock. Reports from Cyprus this evening are describing a large explosion being heard at the British RAF base there. It's believed to have come from the site known as Akrotiri, which is one of two UK facilities on the island. They're both classed as British sovereign territory. LBC has contacted the Ministry of Defence asking for a comment. Just after 9 o'clock, the Prime Minister announced a shift in policy on the US-Israeli military action against Iran. He says the UK has agreed to request from Washington to allow it to use British military bases for strikes against Tehran's missile sites. Sir Keir Starmer says the move is being made for a specific and limited defensive purpose.
The basis of our decision is the collective self-defence of long-standing friends and allies and protecting British lives. That is in accordance with international law, and we are publishing a summary of our legal advice.
Sir Mark Lyle Grant is a former British ambassador to the United Nations. He's been telling Nick Abbott on LBC the UK is getting involved in a way which appears ethical.
You can make a very strong legal case for saying we are now responding to a request from our allies in the Gulf, collective defence, that makes it legal under international law, and we will therefore do everything we can to try and stop these attacks. And one way to do that is to allow the Americans to use British bases to deploy heavy bombers.
President Trump has also issued a new video message. He's been warning the US will avenge the deaths of three military personnel who've died this weekend. Donald Trump has also accused Iran of waging war against civilization, and he's made a new request for a popular uprising against the Islamic Republic.
I call upon all Iranian patriots who yearn for freedom to seize this moment, to be brave, be bold, be heroic, and take back your country. America is with you. I made a promise to you, and I fulfilled that promise. The rest will be up to you, but we'll be there to help.
Stay with LBC throughout the night for continuing coverage of the conflict involving Iran, with more coming up from Nick Abbott. LBC weather, wet and windy for Northern Ireland and much of Scotland overnight. Those conditions will eventually spread into Wales and the west of England, but clear spells will develop elsewhere. We'll see a low of around 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
We've heard reports of an explosion hitting a British Royal Air Force base in Cyprus. A strong explosion was heard at the British Akrotiri Air Force base in Limassol at around midnight local time after a security threat was reportedly declared. It's not known if the explosion is linked to events in Iran, but it comes on the back of Keir Starmer granting the US permission to launch defensive strikes on Iranian missile sites from UK bases. Let's talk about this and related issues with Andrew Fox. Andrew is a military analyst and Middle East strategy expert, also a former paratrooper who served in the Middle East, and he joins us on the line now. Hello, Andrew.
Good evening.
Does it seem likely that this explosion, if it turns out that that's what it was in response to Keir Starmer granting the US permission to launch defensive strikes on Iranian missile sites from UK bases?
Well, look, we can't make any firm conclusions at this point, but Akrotiri is a place through which a variety of countries stage their aircraft moving through to the Middle East. It's where we run our own fighter jets from, and where the Americans run the U-2 spy plane out of. So it would be a logical target for Iran if they were trying to respond to the attacks and the war that's going on there at the moment. And we certainly know that Cyprus is heavily infiltrated by a number of hostile nations, including Russia. So it's not a huge leap of the imagination to suggest it might be connected.
Does it make operational sense for Iran to be attacking so many places?
It's a difficult one. I mean, they are flailing around somewhat wildly, but what they're trying to do, particularly with their attacks on the Gulf, is make it so expensive for the Gulf states that they try and pressure Washington to end the war early. That's their strategy. When it comes to Cyprus, it seems particularly foolish because with an attack on British sovereign territory, that immediately begins the article of NATO's collective self-defense into play. And that could potentially bring everyone in NATO into this war, which is a really poor decision on Iran's part. But what I would say is it suggests that their command and control has been severely disrupted. We know they've had their entirety of their command structure at the top taken out. And I suggest that perhaps the command and control that you would hope for in an operation really isn't there on the Iranian side, and you've got relatively junior commanders making relatively poor decisions.
You say that the Iranians would try to put pressure on the Strait of Hormuz and so on, and attacking the countries in that area in order for Washington to end the war early. Is it not more likely that Washington wants to end the war early with as few casualties as possible to their own side, and it would be in the interest of the Iranians to actually drag it out?
Well, look, President Trump has said he wants this war to end in 4 weeks. They're very much hoping that they can destroy enough of the internal security systems of Iran, that the Iranian people can rise up and take over from the regime. That's the very clear American goal. And in terms of the Iranian regime, what they want to do is survive. So, yes, it does make sense for them to drag the war out and try and maintain some kind of control over the country. But by the same token, far better is if the war ends early with them still in play. So it's a win-win for Iran on that front, as long as the regime stays in power.
And it is likely that the regime will have succession plans, isn't it? Because the supreme leader is like mid-80s and in poor health, so they're going to have a plan to replace him.
Well, of course, the supreme leader has already been killed, but today his replacement was also killed. As was the former president of Iran. So the Americans and the Israelis are clearly very aware of who the kind of successors might be. They're trying to reduce that pool of successors to make sure that whoever takes over eventually is someone that they can either do business with or a completely fresh administration unrelated to the previous regime, because the people of Iran have risen up and overthrown the dictators. So it's a very... it's a very difficult situation. This is the most difficult part of the war plan. You can take out as many defences as you want. You can take out as many Republican Guard as you want. You know, there's all these targets ready to hit. But actually what comes next is the hardest question.
Do you think that anybody that is engaged in this has any idea what comes next? Has any plan about what comes next? Or are they just lobbing bombs in and see what happens?
Yeah, I suspect there is, because the biggest problem with Iran previously, when we've seen rounds of protests, is that the protesters are fairly disparate in their goals. And they've failed to achieve a kind of unifying front against the regime. So certainly, I think if I were in Jerusalem or in Washington planning this war, I would be putting resources behind people on the ground. We know there's a significant Israeli footprint who are operating within Iran's borders. And I think it would be surprising, frankly, if there weren't people on the ground making sure that the resistance or the revolution or whatever you want to call it do have some serious backing and do have some capability to try and make that surge and take Tehran.
Really? Because Donald Trump, a couple of weeks ago, he said, well, it wasn't weeks, it was, well, when he said that, you know, you get out of the streets and take down your government and I'll have your back. And the people of Iran did do that, and they were machine-gunned in the street, and Donald Trump did not have their back. So why would they trust him this time?
Yeah, it's a very good point, and I agree with you completely, and it's a genuine stain on the presidency that Mr. Trump made those calls and those promises and then didn't deliver in time to stop people being massacred in their tens of thousands. Absolutely appalling from Washington. But what we are seeing from the ground, the very limited footage that's coming out, is that people are still listening. They are still grateful for the fact that America is hitting the regime. And as I said, there will be people on the ground facilitating the chosen successors for the regime. And really, once the security apparatus is sufficiently degraded, then I suspect is when we will see a genuine attempt to overthrow the regime in Tehran. If we get to that point, and whoever takes over doesn't make a deal with Trump in the meantime.
It is a bit of a tall order, though, isn't it, to ask people who aren't armed, because it's like in this country, people are not ordinarily in possession of guns. So people who aren't armed to rise up against those that are, given that in their recent history, there was a massacre.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very, very tall challenge. The real challenge here particularly is that the regime have 1 million people under arms. They have 11 separate headquarters, and each of those separate headquarters has 5 or 6 levels of subordinate headquarters underneath them. And they have the ability to lock down pretty much every street corner in every town in Iran. You know, this is a very effective dictatorship that has a vice-like control over its people. And I think what we'll see over the coming days and weeks is American and Israeli attempts to try and degrade that control. And everything will depend on how much of that control they can take out, how much of that control they can persuade just not to fight, or indeed how much they can persuade to change sides. It's an extremely tall order.
It's a tall order to effect a regime change by just aerial bombing. Do you think that is there, in your knowledge, an example of removing an autocratic government that has been, leading a country for decades, and then peace and harmony to break out?
Well, quite. We've got Kosovo as a relatively good example, where it took 78 days of bombing and then another year before there was what you might term a regime change, and that was only with the threat of ground forces. We've got Libya in 2011 as an example, which took 222 days to remove Gaddafi, and then, of course, it descended into absolute chaos. So historical precedent is not on Iran's side at this point. The only positive, I think, is that Iran has been a country that's been in existence for thousands of years. This is one of the world's ancient civilizations. They are a unified country. They don't have the internal societal divisions that perhaps Libya and Kosovo, former Yugoslavia, might have had. And I think that gives them potentially a chance to pull something out of the ashes of the current regime. But, as you say, it is a very long shot, and chances of success are probably lower than 50% at this point.
Very good to talk to you, Andrew. Thanks very much for your time. That's Andrew Fox, military analyst and Middle East strategy expert, former paratrooper who served in the Middle East. So what do you think of the prospect of a democracy rising from the ashes in Iran? Will the people of Iran rise up as one against the oppressors, or is it actually more likely that they will start fighting amongst themselves for access to the riches in Iran, which are vast? 0345 6060 973. Dover, Edgar.
Yes, hi.
Edgar.
I think this Keir Starmer statement that is going to allow the Americans to use the air bases. There's a difference without a distinction. I mean, if he's talking about protecting the British people and all the businesses and all that that is going on to give himself permission to allow the Americans, why aren't we doing it ourselves? Why aren't we standing up for our people and going in and saying, yo, we're not going to stand for this? Yeah, these are people that are outside of the Israel, and that's the problem they have, is Israel-Iran. Yeah, so why do we need to allow the Americans? Yeah, why can't we go in and do it? Why can't we stand up for them? Why do we have to have all this legality and this, you know, like Shakespeare said, get rid of the lawyers first. Yeah, why doesn't he come out straight and say, look, you know, either leave our people alone or let them to get out, or we're going to come in as well?
Right. So I think Keir Starmer is trying to, one, act within international law, and I'm not sure it's a positive move to get rid of the lawyers anymore, and it's a good idea to get rid of the media or any other mark on the wish list of an autocrat.
Please, let's be straight and honest and clear about this. So this is a back way of him allowing, you know, them to use the bases, yeah? Why doesn't he just come out and say, we're going to allow you to use it, we've changed our mind, but put in it's because of the British people and our businesses in there. Why can't we stand up for them ourselves? Plus, you know, we're dealing with an indicted war criminal that's, you know, also moving, you know, his little...
Which one?
Moves. Oh, Netanyahu. Right. He's an indicted war criminal, isn't he? He's wanted.
Well, that's what the UN has suggested, yes.
Yes, so well, I have some respect for the UN, you know, so, and that thing doesn't happen easily, you know, getting dragged up in front of the International Criminal Court. It's not willy-nilly, you know.
But we would be joining with Israel in that attack that you say that we should be engaging in.
Well, no, we are engaged already with them, you know, in one way or the other. Yeah, we're defending, we're helping them, we're protecting them. So we're only shooting down drones or missiles that are sent to the other five countries that were not part of the invasion. So if we see a missile coming in for Israel and we get a chance to shoot it down, we're not going to do it? Nah, we're already in it. You know, it's we've been gaslit.
Right, so you're saying that we are already in a war with Iran, we just haven't admitted that we're in a war with Iran?
Correct.
Right, okay. Thank you, Edgar. 0345 6060973.
LBC.
Forecasting sun with 100% chance of beach. There's not long left to get up to £500 off package holidays in EasyJet's Big Orange Sale. Plus, get up to 20% off flights. EasyJet. Get out there. Selected dates and flights sail on 3rd of March. Holidays min spend and ATOL protected. T's and C's apply.
Chase is the digital bank that gives you 1% cash back on groceries.
So can I get cash back on cake mix?
Indeed.
And icing?
Yep.
And sprinkles?
Sure.
And candles?
Yeah. And you can turn all that cash back into a nice birthday treat.
How do you know it's my birthday?
Just a hunch. Get 1% cash back on groceries, fuel and everyday transport when you spend with Chase. Search Chase Bank. 18 plus UK residents. 1% cash back on this debit card spending for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Eligibility and exceptions apply. May be changed or withdrawn.
My name is Karen and this is my NHS story. You don't realise how blind you are until you have cataract surgery. I was referred to a surgical hub and they booked us in for an operation. It was about 3 weeks before I was there. It's very, very quick.
The government is opening more surgical hubs with more than 120 already operating across England, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS fit for the future.
If you were missold a home on a holiday park, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive compensation. Text ADVICE to 78900.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
So we appear to be at least superficially engaging in a war with America against Iran. And it is interesting that of the top three countries with the largest oil reserves in the world, Donald Trump has attacked two of them, two of the top three.
Venezuela was number one, and Iran has the third largest reserves of oil in the world. Now, that might just be a coincidence. You decide. Feltham, Mohsen.
Thanks for having me.
Mohsen.
British Iranian here. Just to clarify, the QS summer, because I've retaliated against the Iran, not just because I'm British.
Mohsen, it's a really bad line. We'll call you back. All right? Try to get to higher ground. Merthyr Tydfil. Hello, Jeff.
Hiya, Nick. It's interesting that no one has actually mentioned that Pakistan and Afghanistan have declared war on each other. Afghanistan shares a border with Iran, that's eastern Iran, and so does Pakistan. And they are now officially at war with each other. You have the added complication that straddling these borders, the communal border, you have groups like Baluchistan, you have the Kurds further west, but the Kurds, and the hint is that their arms are moving across the border to the Kurds. Iran is on the verge, right? If the oppression of the this horrendous regime for the last 30, 40 years is now, the pressure is relieved on the different populations of Iran, the complications are endless. And to think that you've got a megalomaniac, and it says on the tin, megalomania means he's a maniac, for whatever obscure reason he's decided to attack.
You're talking about Trump now?
Yeah. Where does that leave the UK? Well, you've got Keir just turning around and saying, initially, we're not getting involved.
Yeah.
Now he's turned around and said, yes, he can use the bases. This attitude that we can do anything, I'd love to know how, because UK forces are being hollowed out till they virtually, literally, a hollow shell.
Yes, and we've been told by successive military, ex-military personnel that we are in great danger of being overrun by Russia if they decided to attack us, because our military is not fit for purpose. We've been told that over and over again, year after year, and yet here we are.
So Kia's original, and don't forget that Kia was reflecting the views of Western Europe, the EU, basically, France, Germany, etc. They were saying, hey, whoa, hang on, let's see how this thing pans out. Let's see what happens before we commit to anything. But now he's jumped again and said, well, you can use the bases. Yeah, we had to make a long, involved legal statement. But where does that leave the whole of the situation descending in Iran? Because they're hitting out at everybody. They're firing rockets across the Straits of Hormuz. They're hitting Bahrain. They're hitting Dubai. They're hitting everybody. Because as one of your previous speakers said, that they've wiped out the higher command in the army there.
And so a lot of local commanders are making their own decisions about who to fire at. I mean, particularly because the internet in Iran doesn't work anymore. So I would imagine that communications between the military hierarchy and those lower down is very, very difficult. So I think they've been given the option to just hit whoever and wherever they like. And that's probably underscores what's happening now. It seems a bit random because it is.
Yeah, but you see, the situation is descending into chaos already, as far as I can tell. For instance, no one has spoken at all about the situation in eastern Iran, where Afghanistan and Pakistan, they've declared war on each other. Okay, the Taliban. Well, do you remember the Taliban? You know what they can do? And Pakistan, the whole Pakistan army is being involved.
Yes, well, this was sort of low down the news agenda because it didn't really particularly involve us. But the story is that Pakistan has bombed areas in Afghanistan after the Afghan Taliban announced a major offensive against Pakistani military posts near the border. They've been at it for ages, these two countries, and it's not getting any better.
But it will influence across the border into Iran, because tribal areas are influenced because they are of the same tribe, right?
Is it not possible that the people within Iran now have a common enemy and a common cause? Disagreements in and amongst themselves might be put on hold until they can achieve a change in the regime, and quite possibly then they'll go back to fighting amongst each other, because that's just human nature.
Yeah, well, you've said it all there, Nick. They'll start fighting each other as sure as God made the little apples. They're going to start fighting each other because the spoils are so immense.
The third largest oil reserves in the world. Yeah.
And I don't think the British Army or the British forces are in any shape to take on any role at this point in time.
There's no indication that we will. I mean, that Keir Starmer, even though he's now sort of changed his position slightly by saying that we've taken the decision to prevent Iran firing missiles across the region, killing innocent civilians and putting British lives at risk by allowing the Americans to use our bases. He says the partners in the Gulf have asked us to do more to defend them, and it's my duty to protect British lives, he says.
Well, when you've got an American president, which is, he's under a lot of pressure from various ways, he's trying to convince them that the petrol's cheap, that it's never been greater, it's wonderful to live in America, and we all know it's baloney, and then you have the pressure, the Epstein files, you've got the idea that he's going to get enrichment from it, like he's planning on doing in Venezuela. He's got lots of thoughts going through his head, and who knows where he's going to go? No one can predict that one. But what we are concerned about is what's going to happen to Iran afterwards. It could be. And don't forget they were allied with Putin, who has now just said that the invasion or what they're doing in Iran is an act of murder, and it should be condemned by international law.
Right. Well, it is a bit hard taking lectures about law from Vladimir Putin, but yes, they are allies of Iran, as are China, by the way. So, what might happen next? We'll find out when it does. Thanks a lot, Jeff. 0345-6060-973. Let's hope we get a better line now. We'll join Mohsen in Fulham again. Hello, Mohsen.
Hi, thanks for having me. British Iranian here.
Go ahead.
I believe Keir Starmer should have taken retaliation rather than being bullied and not taking action.
Bullied?
Those IRCG, if they think you're weak, they're going to bully you. That's how they are. And I know how they are. It's not just me. You can see Persian people that are very excited and very emotional after this Ayatollah bin death. After his death, they're on the street, the chanting, and they're excited because they know these extremists took our people for 90 years almost as the slaves, and people they can't speak up.
Yes, but do you think what might happen next is just a change of guard at the top and continuing as was?
Listen to the duo speech with other he was actually putting very decent points. I believe, it's going to happen. Why? Because the regime is extremely weak. The last time, that was a month ago, a couple of months ago, there was a protest. So why they have to import many people from some jihadis from Afghanistan, from Pakistan, and from, I think, Iraq.
Iraq, yeah.
They didn't have enough manpower. They are extremely weak. They have not... I know, obviously, it's a war. It can happen, but this regime, if we're not going to get rid of them now, what's going to happen? They're chanting death to America, death to UK. We know the fact. If they literally hit us in Greece. So if they could have reached the UK, they would have hit us. Look at Dubai. They're unusual. Why are they hitting Dubai? Why do they have to hit the hotel? I would say yes, if they would have hit American bases, right. But why do they have to hit the hotel?
Well, we don't know that they were actually aiming at the hotel. They might have been just firing missiles in that direction.
Could be. That's other thing. But I'm saying that there are jihadis. They don't care. They don't care about non-Muslim.
Do you think that the people of Iran would rise up as one? And if they were successful in toppling the regime, that they would actually work together for the benefit of all? Or is it more likely that, you know, knowing what human beings are like, they would start fighting over the spoils amongst themselves to see who becomes top dog?
Exactly. So I think they will, because as far as I can hear the people from inside and outside, they were just hoping the regime is going to be weaker.
Mm. And have you managed to talk to anybody inside Iran?
Yeah, I managed to talk to some people. Some people are buying some, I think, filters just to orbit certain internet.
Right.
That try to reach out on making it social media and stuff. But I've been on the street today. I've seen people that are talking, and I met them myself. All I want to say that people that were just hoping to get this regime maybe weaker, and then to get rid of this boots regime. And obviously, we don't need to put the boots on the ground. People, they're going to get rid of them. People, UK and all around the world, they're scared. What's going to happen next? Is it going to be Syria? Is it going to be Libya and stuff? No, Persian people, they had a democracy. They're hungry. They're literally waiting for it. They're hungry for it.
Right.
And they were just waiting. The regime at the time, if they would be 100% powerful, if they had the power, they wouldn't import some foreigners just to kill their own people.
Right, well, that's a good point. Thanks for that, Mohsen. 0345-6060-973. More of your calls to come on this. Going to take a break for the news, and then Nigel Farage has called for Commonwealth citizens to be banned from voting in British elections. First, the news headlines with Tim Daly.
LBC has asked the Ministry of Defence for a comment following reports describing a large explosion being heard at the British RAF base on Cyprus. It's believed to have come from the site known as Akrotiri, which is one of two UK facilities on the island, both classed as British sovereign territory. Just after 9 o'clock, the Prime Minister announced a shift in policy on the US-Israeli military action against Iran. He says the UK has agreed to requests from Washington to allow it to use British military bases for strikes against Tehran's missile sites. President Trump has also issued a new video message. He's been warning the US will avenge the deaths of three military personnel who've died this weekend. LBC weather, wet and windy for Northern Ireland and much of Scotland overnight. Those conditions will eventually reach Wales and Western England, but it will be clear elsewhere. We'll see a low of around 7 degrees.
LBC.
And when teams feel supported, they can achieve anything.
Sorry. Just had even more of my team are off ill.
Have you tried Benenden Health? It's easy to set up. They've got a GP helpline you can book 24/7.
Where were we?
A coffee break, hopefully.
Press play on your people's health with a wide range of healthcare services for less than £16 per employee per month. Search Benenden for business. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
It's not easy being a clamp, stuck on the wheel of the one person on the street who didn't tax their car. Yeah, Graham at number 7, I'm talking about you. Bet the neighbourhood group chat is as well. Wish I had a group chat. Maybe I can chat to myself.
Hi, Clampy, how's it going?
Not great, Clampy. Being clamped to the only untaxed car for miles is so lonely.
Over 98% of drivers tax their vehicle on time. Tax it, don't risk it. Visit gov.uk/DVLA/taxit.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan. Gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose. dress in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. Affordable cover with a cash payout. Search Sunlight Cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payout. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Nigel Farage wants to ban Commonwealth citizens from voting in British parliamentary elections. He said that it led to elections being fought on international rather than domestic issues, and said that we need to think very hard about allowing citizens to vote from the 56 countries across Africa, Asia, the Americas, Europe and the Pacific. At the moment, Commonwealth citizens can register to vote if they meet residency or leave to remain conditions. Another thing Farage wants is to ban postal voting, claiming that it is a hotbed of corruption, or at least potentially so. Femi Nylander is a filmmaker, activist and author, and joins us on the line now to talk about this. Hello, Femi.
Hello, how's it going?
Pretty good, thanks. So what do you make of what Nigel Farage has said?
Well, I mean, of course Nigel Farage wants to do that, because Nigel Farage's biggest contingency of voters, or at least the people who are voting for Nigel Farage in the greatest numbers, are going to be people who are in that camp of xenophobic, anti-migrant, often anti-non-so-called white British. And I mean, this is Farage's base, and any person is going to want to increase their base when it comes to elections. There's a whole history of this kind of thing. Back in the day, the Commonwealth supposedly is supposed to say that everyone across the Commonwealth is part of Britain. Well, this was great during the colonial period where we wanted to expand and take people's resources. Now, suddenly, Commonwealth citizens who have residency in the UK, who live in the UK, who've lived in the UK for years, are being told they can't vote because they're not going to vote for the candidate who obviously is more nativist, more jingoist, more... almost blood and earth in his arguments, right?
It does seem as though that what he wants is to restrict voting to people who aren't offended by the things he says.
Precisely. He wants to restrict... I mean, of course, there'll be people born in Britain. There'll be plenty of British citizens who are offended by the things he says. I know plenty of British people who are offended by the things that Nigel Farage says. British citizens... Black and white and Indian of Indian origin, and every kind of shade you can think of. But what he's trying to do here, obviously, is trim around the edges a little bit and get rid of some of the people who disagree with him. Of course, I mean, Commonwealth residents who have residency, they work, they pay taxes, they raise children in the UK, they use the UK's public services, they're subject to UK law, so the state governs them, it taxes them, it polices them. It can deport them if it finds reasons to do so. So excluding them from political participation eventually means that you have a class of people who are governed but not represented. They're governed, they pay taxes to the system, they participate in the system, sometimes for decades at a time, but they have no say in the system because they're not the right kind of person for Farage.
Yes, it's taxation without representation, isn't it?
Exactly, the age-old adage, right?
So Nigel Farage's position seems to depend on the notion that Muslims, because I imagine that that's who he is referring to with the accusation of what's called family voting, where more than one member of a family goes into a booth, presumably for... I mean, the allegation is that they would be overseeing the more junior family member to make sure that they vote in the way that the senior family member wants them to. I think that is the allegation. And so it depends on the notion that Muslims all vote as with one mind. I mean, how can he possibly know that they didn't vote for him?
Well, this is the thing as well. The same kind of thing will happen in non-Muslim families. I personally know people who've been ostracized from their wider family because of the fact that they themselves do not take hardline anti-immigrant stances. I know people whose parents fall down the Farage style, all immigrants are terrible, we must stop the boats, all the problems in this country come from immigrants. They read the Sun, this, that and the rest, and their own children have taken a different line
and they've been ostracised from their family. They barely speak to their family. They've been cut off financially. So it could work both ways in any situation in which you have a power dynamic such as father-son, mother-daughter, the financial implications that's involved in being in a family. Parents can pressure you into doing things, into taking certain stances. And even if they don't pressure you, growing up in a certain environment is going to put you in close contact with those viewpoints. And I think that it's just a bit ridiculous to assume that would happen more with Muslims than anyone else. If people are being pressured by their parents to vote when they vote by post in a certain way, even young people barely do postal voting anyway. It's not really a thing. Then that would happen across lines. And if people are going in to vote for themselves, then the same protections, which means that your vote is anonymous, will apply to young Muslims. Parents aren't going to know who they voted for anyway.
Yes, it is curious that if that is his problem, Zia Yusuf is Muslim, Nadeem Zahawi is Muslim. They are the two of the top people in the Reform Party. In the Green Party, Zach Polanski is Jewish. Does it seem likely that Muslims would cheat to ensure that the Jewish-led party would win over the Muslim-led one?
Well, I mean, this is the thing. I think that, there's, as you mentioned, there's a vast number of people. There's always going to be minorities as well who will join these parties. I mean, I think a video came out of GB News presenter today, Nana Akua, essentially being challenged and told that he doesn't belong in the country by I think one of these Restore UK people. And if you put yourself in that environment and you decide to stand for a channel like GB News or a party like Reform or Restore UK, then really, I don't think I can have much sympathy for you. But I do agree, of course, that yeah, there's going to be People will vote. A lot of people vote for their economic interest. There's plenty of people who are black and brown in this country who vote against illegal migration because they think that it's going to come and steal their job. You find people of all walks of life who vote for all sorts of things. And the whole point of one man or one man, one woman, one vote is that you get your say. And taking people's, and also like things like restricting postal voting. Let's be honest about what restricting postal voting does. It blocks out a certain group of people. It blocks out people who can't go out to vote easily. So we're talking about people on shift work. We're talking about sometimes people who are very old. We're talking about people who are disabled. We're often talking about carers, people in care work, people who have unstable schedules. These are the people who are disproportionately as well, they're going to be poorer, they're often going to be more precarious. Whereas a kind of retiree who goes to Waitrose twice a week would often be able to get to the polls. And we saw the same thing in the States. Donald Trump and his whole postal voting this, postal voting that. It's almost that segment of it is a carbon copy of Donald Trump claiming electoral fraud through postal voting however many years ago when he didn't get the result he wanted, right?
It all seems like a carbon copy of Donald Trump. It's essentially, whatever Donald Trump whines about in any election that he loses, it seems to be mirrored by the similar claims from Reform, as though they are, singing from the same hymn sheet or part of the same movement.
I think some people would say they're part of the same movement, the same broader movement. I mean, there has been this whole break-off with Mr. Rupert recently from Farage, and I think Elon Musk has been very supportive of the splinter group. But I think it all, in my opinion, falls under the same far-right umbrella and is part of the same global movement, which isn't just restricted to the US and the UK. We see Viktor Orban, we see Marine Le Pen, we see a wave of this happening across Europe and the so-called Western world. I would say that it is part of the same overwhelming trend, and that people don't like the fact that you do see changing. When you colonize half of the world, or quarter to half of the world, then you might end up seeing some demographic changes in your major urban centers in the future, as you are now a rich country with massive links, linguistic trade, etc., to huge swathes of the planet by your own doing. And those demographic changes will lead to a different demography in the country voting. I mean, that's so-called white Brits, as Farage and the rest would call them, are still the majority in this country. And if one seat has voted differently because of demographics, that's how democracy works, unfortunately.
Yes, it's curious that Farage is concerned about foreigners interfering in elections when the major donor to reform lives in Thailand and his second in command commutes from Dubai.
Well, of course, this is the age old thing about Brits. Often will moan about immigrants. They come here, they don't speak our language, they don't integrate. However, if you go to one of these places in southern Spain, Malaga, Marbella, I don't think you're going to find many of the people with holiday homes there speaking fluent Spanish. We like to jet all over the world and be expats. And you'll go to Dubai because of tax reasons. Well, people might be packing their bags at the moment. Mm. I mean, this is the thing about Brits. That when they do it, they're expats. When other people do it, they're immigrants.
Yes.
Not all Brits, obviously.
No.
Farage and
And it is odd that just before the election, that Farage said he did not want fought on international issues. He was in the Maldives trying to pull a publicity stunt about the Chagos Islands.
Well, this is the thing as well. I mean, this is a silly day to say that you don't want to talk about international issues, because if anything, we're about to see a massive shift in global stock market. Almost definitely, as soon as markets open tomorrow, due to international issues, we're going to see shifts in the price of oil. We're going to see shifts in how certain parts of the Middle East are viewed in terms of whether or not they're safe investments, whether or not they're safe places to do tourism. We've seen one of the world's most major international airports shut and evacuated, which has flowed trade, which has flowed the flow of human. I mean, it's going to have massive implications, all of this, and not just shut because of a technical glitch, shut because there was a drone that blew up, right? So, I mean, this is the thing. International issues are not international issues. They're national issues. The UK plays a role on the international stage, whether that's a good role or a bad role, I'll let the listener make their own judgments, but it plays a role, and what happens on the international stage has an impact on the UK. And so people in the UK are not wanting to, and even if it didn't, people should care about what goes on in other parts of the world, just out of basic things called empathy and interest. But even if it didn't, it will impact the UK. So, of course, people are going to vote on international issues as well as domestic issues.
Femi, good to talk to you. Thanks so much for that. Filmmaker, activist and author Femi Nylander. Now we're going to take a short break, then back to your thoughts on what is happening in Iran. Specifically, there is reports of an explosion at an RAF base in Cyprus. We'll be talking to a chief reporter at the Cyprus Mail after this.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
This is Taxation Without Representation.
Straight to the point.
You get giddy with all these U-turns.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Lucky he gets up in the morning, really, isn't it?
Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
On your marks, get set, go hybrid. The new Toyota Aygo Cross Hybrid. More oomph than a Friday feeling. And smoother than your last online date. More confidence, more go. In a new hybrid engine with 0% APR representative over 24 months. The new Toyota Aygo Cross Hybrid. Go on. Visit your local Toyota centre. Price from £21,595. Available on Toyota PCP when financed through Toyota Financial Services by 31st March 2026. Optional final payment indemnities may be required. See website conditions apply.
It's not easy being a clamp, stuck on the wheel of the one person on the street who didn't tax their car. Yeah, Graham at number 7, I'm talking about you. Bet the neighbourhood group chat is as well. Wish I had a group chat. Maybe I can chat to myself.
Hi, Clampy. How's it going?
Not great, Clampy. Being clamped to the only untaxed car for miles is so lonely.
Over 98% of drivers tax their vehicle on time. Tax it. Don't risk it. Visit gov.uk/DVLA/taxit.
It's time to scale up that fishmonger business, Anne. With free day-to-day online banking from Virgin Money, you'll be a big fish in no time. Now that's a real catch of the day. Open Virgin Money's M account for business now.
UK excludes NI, Channel Islands and the Isle of Man. 18 plus fees apply for CHAPS and international payments. Terms and exclusions apply. Backed by the current account switch service. Virgin Money is a trading name of Clydesdale Bank PLC.
With a gift in your will to UNICEF, you'll know that the job of making a better world for every child is in good hands. It'll be the start of an incredible journey, connecting you with a powerful community of people working tirelessly to protect and nurture children so they're empowered to take on the world. To find out more about leaving a gift in your will that never stops working for children, search UNICEF Legacy for a free guide today.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Guess more of your thoughts about what is happening, our relation with America and Israel as far as the attacks on Iran are concerned. Now let's talk about what is happening in Cyprus. We've heard reports of an explosion hitting a British Royal Air Force base in Cyprus. LBC is awaiting a response from the Ministry of Defence about that. In the meantime, let's talk to Tom Cleaver. Tom is the chief reporter at the Cyprus Mail in Nicosia, and he is on the line now. Hello, Tom.
Good morning, Mr. Abbott. How are we getting on?
Very well, thanks. Thanks for your time. What do you know about this?
Well, I've been informed that a small drone has impacted the airfield at Akrotiri, and the agencies are responding to it, from what I've been told. So far, I've been told there have been no casualties, but that minor damage has been caused to infrastructure there. Personnel at the Air Force base have been told to remain in place and await further instruction, as it is believed that there may be, and I quote, additional impact.
What's a small drone mean? How small is small?
I wish I knew. To be honest with you, I have no idea. I'm not an expert in drone warfare at all, but I heard unconfirmed reports that it was a Shahed 136 drone. That I haven't had confirmed at all. That's just a rumor that's going around at the moment. That's a drone that's been used in the Ukraine war by the Russian side. It's a one-way attack drone, which basically means it was fired and then explodes when it impacts.
Right. What's the strength of the British military in Cyprus? How many people are there?
To be honest, I don't know. There's two sovereign base areas, which means that they are sovereign UK territory and they're not under the control of or really related to the authorities here in Cyprus. So it's not really the business of the local authorities here to know what's going on in the bases. So I don't know how many people are down there at the moment, to be honest with you.
Right. Do they cover a large area?
I don't know the exact square kilometerage, but there are land areas, yes. West of Limassol, which is the second largest city in Cyprus, there's a sort of peninsula which juts out southwards, and that entire peninsula belongs to the United Kingdom. And then east of Larnaca, between Larnaca and Ayanapa, the popular tourist destination, there's another base called Vekelia, which again is sovereign British territory, and it takes up a fair chunk of the island. In fact, you can't drive from Larnaca to Ayanapa without driving through British territory.
And has the local authorities mentioned anything about this?
Not to my knowledge yet. It's almost 2 a.m. here, so most people are asleep. I haven't heard anything from the local police or from the local emergency services. The British bases have their own police and their own authorities which deal with things internally. And if this was on the airfield, that's even further away from the local authorities here. So I haven't heard anything from the local police. We had the politicians here earlier when John Healey, the defense secretary in the United Kingdom, said that drones had been fired in the direction of Cyprus. We had three or four high-profile politicians here in Cyprus deny that during the day today. But obviously, since then, things have obviously become a bit more serious.
Why did they go as far as to deny it, do you think?
Well, they say they were informed by high-level sources of their own that the strikes, well, the rumours of the reports of the drones being sent in one direction were not true.
Right.
They said they've been informed by other sources. It was the president, Nikos Christodoulidis, who said he'd spoken to Keir Starmer, who'd said that Cyprus wasn't a target. The defense minister, Vasilis Palamas, has said that what Healy said, and I quote, was categorically not true. And the government spokesman, Konstantinos Dimitriadis, was another one who said it wasn't true. It could be for economic reasons, but that's speculation far beyond my pay grade to say why exactly they would say it. But they say they've been informed by other sources that it wasn't the case.
Quite a large Russian population in Cyprus, is that right?
Yes, and its largest population is in Limassol. And there were fears as recently as last week that Russian nationals were buying up property near the British sovereign base area, and that could be a espionage threat to the British.
And is that the first that you've heard of such a thing?
Of people, of espionage
yeah.
in bases? No, it's happened a fair bit. I think there were arrests last year, if I remember correctly. And there have been various incidences in recent years as geopolitics has hotted up a little bit of accusations, allegations, and even, I believe, a couple of court cases regarding alleged espionage in and around the British bases and in Cyprus in general.
Very good to talk to you, Tom. Thanks so much for your time. That's Tom Cleaver, the chief reporter at the Cyprus Mail in Nicosia, talking about reports of an explosion hitting a British Royal Air Force base in Cyprus. A strong explosion was heard, apparently, at the British Akrotiri Air Force Base in Limassol around midnight local time. It's not yet known. We don't know the details of it. And the Ministry of Defence, we've asked them for a response, and we are waiting for that. It comes on the back, of course, of Keir Starmer granting the US permission to launch defensive strikes on, but that's his word, defensive strikes on Iranian missile sites from UK bases. So we'll keep you updated and let you know more when we know more. Back to your calls and your thoughts about what's happening in Iran and the surrounding area. Solihull. Hello, Omar.
Hi, Nick. How are you doing?
Very well, thanks.
Yeah, Nick, I think the conversation in regards to Iran and the whole Western approach and our approach so far, I think we're severely underestimating and overlooking a few aspects. I was just telling your producer that one thing I haven't heard mentioned so far today, I don't know if it has been mentioned, but that Ayatollah Khamenei, all this talk of him of producing a nuclear weapon and a nuclear bomb for the last 20 or 30 years or whatever it may be, it's no coincidence that he himself, he issued fatwa and treatise saying that he was of the opinion that nuclear and chemical weapons were against his interpretation of Islam. However, there was a hardline faction, a hardline group that was trying to persuade him or persuade this other camp in the opposite direction and actually put forward the argument that, in fact, they need a nuclear bomb to be a deterrent against any attacks in the future. And do you know who the leader of this camp, this particular faction is, Nick?
Well, go on.
It's Ali Reza Arafi, the person, the Ayatollah, that has just replaced the one who's been killed. So if the idea was to kind of cut the head of the snake, as they say, and replace it with more moderate people, they've just achieved the exact opposite. And with Trump now saying that his goal is regime change, there's absolutely no reason for the regime to kind of back down or look for a way out of this. I mean, if Israel and America are openly saying that what they want is to decapitate the regime and remove it, I don't see how they now think after what they've done that they're going to be willing to negotiate when, what do they have to lose?
Well, also, who do you negotiate with? I mean, who's in charge at the moment? Because there's, as far as I know, four members of the Iranian senior leadership and defense figures have been killed. So if you are going to negotiate with the Iranian government, such as it is, then it's a bit difficult to know who to negotiate with.
And also, I think you mentioned a good point earlier of Trump's that, you know, how can you expect like people without any weapons to go out and overthrow the regime? It's quite interesting I think Trump, in some aspects, in his camp, especially like J.D. Vance and these kind of guys, they understand that they may have overstepped a little bit too much. And I was just in the news break, I heard something where Trump, he was saying, you know, I made a promise to you and I've delivered on that promise. And now it's up to you. And to me, it just sounds like he's already developed a way of how he can talk himself out that actually we've wiped our hands of it.
Well,
we've delivered on our promise.
Yes, well, he said that before. He said to the Iranian people, rise up and I will have your back. And they did rise up and they were machine gunned in the street and he didn't have their back. So why anybody would trust him with their lives in that circumstance, I have absolutely no idea.
He's done it before, especially with the Kurds. It's happened so many times where the US has had their back, and when it's convenient, they've abandoned them. And I understand that the Iranian diaspora in the UK is like quite happy and jubilant and saying go in there. But I think even with that, I think we have to be careful because, of course, by default, the Iranian diaspora are going to be in opposition to the regime in Iran.
Yeah.
So I don't think we have a clear sample that we're taking opinions from and understanding the situation on the ground.
Right. Well,
even when we hear that there's 80% of the population in Iran are against the regime, well, that's still 20%. Where you have a potential insurgency, not to mention, 20% of 90 million is not a small number, but not to mention also that there are many ethnic groups that have been vying for independence from Iran. There are more Azeris in Iran than there are in Azerbaijan. The Balochis want their own state. The Kurds want independence. The Arabs in the south have also fought for independence. The Luris want their own state. And, you know, Trump just thinks, you know, I've bombed these people's kids, and if I just bomb their moms, maybe then they'll want me to come and save them. This mentality is just crazy. And one other point, I think when the markets open on Monday and Trump actually sees that 80% of, or I think it's 70% of the U.S. population is against intervention, when he sees his polls crashing and when he understands that he may well lose the midterms from this, because I think it was a gamble, well, also pressure from Israel, but he understands he's going to lose the midterms because of this, and indictments, and, you know, all these things trying to put criminal charges against him, which the Democrats probably will, and you have the Epstein files. I think he's going to back out immediately, and he's going to abandon the Iranian people just as he abandoned the Afghans, the Kurds, the Vietnamese. And this is, I don't see how, there's no kind of plan, you know, as you always
say. Well, there doesn't seem to be a plan at all. I think Trump stated that his plan was world peace. And he was going to bomb them until he got it. I think that was more or less what he said. I'm a little more cynical than you, Omar. I don't think there's going to be midterm elections in America. I think Donald Trump will call a state of emergency and cancel them for your safety. I've been saying that for about a year now, and it becomes more likely with every passing day. We'll be talking to Simon Marks, our US correspondent, in the next hour, and keep taking your calls on what is happening in the Middle East and what you think about our increasing intervention in this another Middle East war.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Cypriot media is reporting an explosion heard at an RAF base on the island tonight was caused by a drone. It's believed to have fallen to earth at Akrotiri, which is one of two British facilities on the island. Tom Cleaver from the Cyprus Mail has been talking to Nick Abbott in the last few minutes.
I've been informed that a small drone has impacted the airfield at Akrotiri, and the agencies are responding to it. So far, I've been told there have been no casualties, but that minor damage has been caused to infrastructure there. Personnel have been told to remain in place and await further instruction, as it is believed that there may be, and I quote, additional impact.
Both British bases on Cyprus are classified as being on UK sovereign territory. LBC has contacted the Ministry of Defence for a comment. The military analyst Andrew Fox has been telling LBC RAF Akrotiri is a highly significant base.
Akrotiri is a place through which
a variety of countries stage their aircraft moving through to the Middle East. It's where we run our own fighter jets from, and where the Americans run the U-2 spy plane out of. So it would be a logical target for Iran if they were trying to respond to the attacks and the war that's going on there at the moment.
Earlier this evening, Sir Keir Starmer announced he was giving the US permission to use British bases to attack missile sites and silos inside Iran. During a pre-recorded statement, he said the action was the best way to prevent the situation in the Middle East spiralling further. But the Prime Minister says the UK's involvement will remain limited.
We will not join offensive action now. But Iran is pursuing a scorched earth strategy. So we are supporting the collective self-defense of our allies and our people in the region. Because that is our duty to the British people.
Three US military personnel have died since the beginning of the US-Israeli attacks against Iran. Tonight, President Trump has warned of more deaths to come. And in other news, a man has been arrested in East Sussex after a social media post calling for Jewish businesses to be targeted with stink bombs. He was detained in New Haven over the post, which also suggested throwing ripe fruit and eggs at a synagogue. Sussex police says the 44-year-old remains in custody. LBC weather, wet and windy for Northern Ireland and much of Scotland overnight. Clear spells will develop elsewhere. We'll see a low of around 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
Donald Trump says the Iranian operations are ahead of schedule as Tehran hits back across the region. Let's talk about the latest developments there with Hallie Blake. Hallie is a British-Iranian activist and co-founder of United for Massa and joins us on the line now. Hello, Hallie.
Hi, Nick.
So what do you know about the latest developments there?
What we are witnessing are precise strikes on military and political leadership and the infrastructure of that. And also what we are seeing is and hearing is the strikes, but also the internet is still shut down, so we don't get too much information. We just get snippets of it coming from Starlinks or when the internet just sporadically connects. What we also hearing this evening, political prisoners from last month are being transferred in blindfolds from Evin prison to another location, and there's worry about their lives immediately, whether they are being used as pawns to any kind of scenario the regime may try to make. So we are quite worried for them. And of course, we are worried for our friends in Iran. And I'm worried for some of my friends who haven't gone online since the 8th of January when they went out protesting after the call for protest on the 8th and 9th of January.
And by political prisoners, you're talking about the people who were protesting at that time, who were then taken in a hostage or prisoner, however you want to put it, by the Iranian regime.
Yeah, well, anyone could be a political prisoner in Iran. I mean, it could be protesters, it could be schoolgirls who were stripped to check if they had pellet wounds and arrested at their school just this week gone. So, yeah, political prisoners could be anyone that had done anything remotely political. It could have been sending messages to journalists outside or just describing and sharing information on social media. So they would be all counted as political prisoners.
Donald Trump has said to the people of Iran that they should use this opportunity to rise up and overthrow the government. How feasible is that?
Well, people are still determined, despite the heavy losses we had last month, where over 40,000 Iranians were massacred with heavy machinery. But the ones that went out and witnessed those massacres are still saying they will go out and don't want to finish the job. And those that, for whatever reason, they didn't go out, are now saying they would join this call, this final call, to take over the streets and take over the institutions. But it needs to be very calculated because, you know, the protesters are unarmed going to the streets without anything. So we need to equalize the game, and that's what we're hoping that Donald Trump is doing, to give them that power to get back out again.
Do the people in Iran who want to overthrow their government have any faith in Donald Trump at all? Because, of course, last time he said, go out and protest and rise up against the regime and I will have your back. And they did, and he didn't.
Well, they also understand that it takes time to move around ships across the world. We were hoping for quick actions. We were hoping for various different scenarios, but they also understand that it takes time. They're being realistic in that manner. But what they were more worried about was the negotiation tables, that there was going to be any kind of reformist discussion. And they were really mad about the nuclear talks because they were describing to us that 40,000 were killed. What nuclear deal? We want democracy and freedom. So they're not, I wouldn't say they're disappointed. They're all celebrating now when they hit the targets yesterday. People were celebrating from the morning and they were going out and about with their normal lives. They were shopping and walking the streets as if nothing was happening.
Now, we've heard a lot about the celebrations, as you said, and the people feeling positively about the change of the regime. But is it also possible that there's a large number of people in Iran who are quite comfortable, or more than that, they love the regime and they want to protect it?
They are not majority. They're a very small minority that are armed. But also don't forget, this is a religious dictatorship, which means that there are people who are religious and following this regime because of the religion. So it's not the full portion of the protests that you see that are entirely regime supporters. But the regime itself does have supporters that are mostly paid. The regime has money and pays people to attend protests and to deliver tasks. So those are mainly the supporters, and there are some ideological ones as well. But they're very much the minority. Even those lobbyist group of the spread the regime propaganda are admitting that they are in the minority now.
But the people who are in the minority, they're the ones with all the weapons, aren't they?
They are, correct. And that's the problem.
Yes. And is it all of the military, or were other branches of the regime's defenders, was it outside the military, or is it all within the military itself? I mean, I'm trying to get an idea of what kind of groups were firing on the protesters.
So there were multiple groups that were firing at the protesters. It was the IRGC that doing the majority of the coordination. Then underneath that, you have the Basiji militia, which is basically volunteer militia format. Then you also had, over 5,000 Iraqi militia that were paid and brought in for the crackdown. And the reason for that is because there were tens of thousands of IRGC members didn't actually turn up to work. And there's been slow defections that's been happening for some months, which an IRGC commander actually confirmed earlier this week, that there's been over 15,000 defections, and they've been calling them, threatening them, and also putting some of them in line for execution. So it's either you die or you serve the regime. But the regime is basically breaking down from inside, and we're just burying it right now, and that's where we're at.
Even though the top man is apparently dead, would they not have had plans for succession? Because he was, after all, in his mid-80s, and he wasn't well. So is there somebody else who can just step nimbly in and try to carry on as before?
Well, he was very much sought after by some of his followers. So there was always going to be some sort of a power grab or competition from within inside. And of course, his son, Mojtaba, was in line. And also, so was the son of the previous supreme leader, was sort of one of the candidates, which does make you think this is more like a monarchy succession, but in a format. There has been obviously discussions, but this isn't public yet as to what will happen next. But this is not elected individuals for the society that will serve the society. So it's not a democratic election at all. And that is part of the problem. That supreme leader controls all aspects of an Iranian society, from judiciary to military, IRGC and beyond.
So given that they have enormous power vested in that position, if somebody else came in and took over, would all of that power be accorded to them? And would the people of Iran take that on board, that this is their new leader?
Yes, the power will be transferred through. We feel that there will be some further cracks within their own supporters who may not accept this new person. And they may have preferences on who they would have wished to have as replacement. And that's always been one of the scenarios we anticipated to witness. And I think that's what we're going to see in the next few weeks as to what will unfold. But there will be competition inside, and that will be part of the crackdown.
Do you think there's going to be competition within the various factions within Iran, the disparate groups? Because all Iranians do not think as with one mind. So is it more likely that they will all come together to fight against the regime, or will they come together to fight against themselves?
Look, it's 90 million Iranians. They are going to have various opinions, just as you would have in the UK. You have different people preferring different parties, but we have been politically poor because there's not been a democratic system where we could practice democratic operations. But Iranians are secular, and they are rooting for this democracy, and that's what they're fighting for. And we do have, when people went out to protest on the 8th and 9th of January, they went out to protest knowing that they may not go back home. And that was a vote itself, that they were trusting and getting behind Reza Pahlavi, who's a secular democratic leader, for the period of transition and to get us to ballot boxes so the Iranians could decide whether they want a republic or a monarchy, both of which should be democratic. And people are getting behind that. I mean, we've had historical images from inside Iran, from the protest, from all 31 provinces, but also outside, really mirroring that. And that unity is there. I do not see us wanting to fight, and that's what I'm worried about. If this does not end, the regime does not end with Trump's strikes, that the Iranians will want to topple this regime anyway, and they'll have to get armed. That's the period that we are concerned about, because that means we have to illegally, I mean, this is what the scenarios people are saying inside, is they have to illegally buy weapons, and get armed and get trained. And that will be a lot of bloodshed, which we want to avoid. We want to save as many lives as we can.
Is it common for people in Iran to have weapons, in much the same way as it's common for people in America to have weapons? Are they readily available?
No, they're not. And probably that's what part of the reason that they could not perhaps defend themselves on the 8th and 9th of January. In some rural areas, just like the UK, you can have guns for the purpose of farming. But it's not readily available. It's not public. When I lived in Iran, I had never seen one in person ever, even in the rural areas. So it's not common at all.
You mentioned before that people need
to come out in a calculated way to fight against the regime with the hope of toppling it. That's going to be very difficult when it's almost impossible to communicate with each other because of a lack of the internet.
Correct. And this is where the role of a leader actually come into play, and that preparation and planning that he's set in place with his team. They've launched a TV channel that can be accessed from inside Iran and doesn't need internet. So there and also there's apps that have been introduced to again tackle that. There has been work done to help communication flows from that outside for that very last day and that very last call that we need to send.
Do you think that there will be one group within Iran who, with an eye on the amount of money that's in the ground with oil, vast untapped reserves of oil, will think, well, we should be the one that takes over Iran and runs it in pretty much the way that it has been run at the moment for our financial benefit?
Of course, Iran is a really resource rich country. It's got 10 times resources per capita. So it's appalling that the 70% of the population is under the line of poverty and unable to even buy meat. Will the will of the people eventually win and we can topple that? I don't think they'll settle for anything not democratic, and they will not settle for a group that will not give them the freedom in business freedom in their entire lives. They will not accept it. I do not see that they will accept anything beyond democracy at this point.
Do the Iranians trust Donald Trump? Because he is the one that tore up the agreement that Iran should cease its nuclear program. It was working fine until Donald Trump came in and saw Barack Obama's signature on it and tore that piece of paper up, and then seemed to demand the exact same deal but with his signature on it. And it seemed that with the conversations that were going on in Oman between the US and Iran, that the Iranians were agreeing to pretty much everything that the Americans wanted as far as the their nuclear program was concerned. And Trump just upended that entire process right as the goal was being achieved, essentially, and has now started this. Do they have any faith in Donald Trump that he is acting in good faith?
They trust Donald Trump more than any of the leaders of this regime who go on TV channels and lie about their supreme leader being alive, which is what happened by the foreign minister yesterday. So they trust him that he will deliver. And this is why so many Iranians didn't sleep for about 50 days, checking their phone every night to wait for these strikes. That element of trust seems to be there. I'm shocked myself, because people may have different opinions on Trump altogether, but they seem to be extremely supportive of him.
Very good to talk to you, Hallie. Thanks so much for your time. That's Hallie Blake, British-Iranian activist, co-founder of United for Massa. So what about you? Are you extremely supportive of Donald Trump? Are you extremely supportive of the sort of tightrope that Keir Starmer is walking at the moment, neither wanting to get involved with the attacks, but saying that it is right and proper that the British military aids America in preventing attacks? That's how he's selling it to us, I think. 0345 6060 973.
The LBC app. News your way. This is LBC.
Upgrade your car at Ancaster MG this spring. With hundreds of new and used electrified vehicles in stock and great offers across the range, there's never been a better time to change. From the all-new MGS 5 EV or MGS 6 EV to the plug-in MGHS hybrid or the fully electric MGIM range, we've got the drive just for you. So book your test drive at ancaster.co.uk/test drive.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of. But he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
This is LBC with Nick Abbott. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
We are talking about the developments in Iran and now Cyprus. George, who is in Cyprus, says Keir Starmer, without considering the safety of Cypriot people, has given permission for use of British bases. Thousands of people are relying on the summer period in the hospitality sector, but now I can see thousands of cancellations in Cyprus. The explosion tonight was at the Akrotiri base, 70 miles from me, says George. The other British base is up the road a mile from me. I can't sleep now. Newcastle. Hello, Chandra.
Good morning. Good morning, Nick. I am really staggered by the simplicity and naivety expressed by people of Iranian origin that are ringing in, because what I've not heard, even the lady that you've just spoken with all due respect, is a sophisticated understanding of the institutions you need to facilitate the transition to democracy. Simply people coming onto the streets, unarmed people, regardless of the number of them coming onto the street, is creating fertile ground for civil war rather than transition to democracy. That thing, I don't think nobody is demonstrating an understanding of, which is extraordinary. And you had a couple of callers today. One gentleman from Wales, Murta Titfel, is it? Joe. And another gentleman, Omar, I think, about half an hour ago. They have both shared stuff which I've not heard from people of Iranian origin. I mean, Baluchistan is a region which spreads between Iran, Pakistan, and Afghanistan. And Baluchi people have been fighting, there's been a separatist movement for decades. And Kurds who live in, I mean, people of Kurdish background who live between Iran, Iraq, and various other countries in the Middle East, there's that separatist movement. So there are so many ticking bombs just waiting. And simply unarmed, educated, nice, middle-class Iranian people turning up on streets is not going to... I feel so frightened and sorry for these innocent individuals, because what they're hoping for is not going to happen by simply them turning upon street. And this orange, there's a gentleman called Ronald Dump, whose name rhymes with Ronald Dump. I think, I don't want him to sue me for £50 billion, which is the reason why I'm speaking like this. But I think what he has done is he has incited Iranian people to a civil war. He has created, I mean, this is not, I'm going to stand with you. This is saying, look, I've killed somebody, now it's up to you to go and kill each other.
You're right. Democracy does not make itself from nothing. You need a government of sorts in place to make it happen.
Yes, a transitional arrangement. And who's nobody? I mean, United Nations has been effectively made spineless, and none of these people who are attacking Iran are talking about transitional arrangements. Yes, you've chopped off the head of the snake, but then how democracy does not happen by itself. You have to have systems in place. Simply people on the street doesn't achieve that.
No.
And the other thing about Keir Starmer, I can't believe he has just gone off and unilaterally expressed his opinion on what Britain should be doing. What the heck is happening? Why isn't the parliament convened? Why isn't there a special special session of parliament? And why wasn't this discussed by the MPs?
Things are moving probably too quickly for that, but he has not sort of joined in the war. He's been very specific about what our role is in this, and it is to protect British lives and British interests by allowing the Americans to use a base over there to knock out the Iranian missiles at source before they can do any damage. That's what he is saying that his position is now. Well, that doesn't sound unreasonable, does it?
Well, it wouldn't be interpreted and read that way by the Iranians.
No, of course not. But
I
understand that. But they were attacking
an act of aggression.
I know that. But they were attacking British citizens and interests before he said that.
Well, that.
So he can either sit there and do nothing while being hit in the face, he can hang his arms limply by his sides, or he can put his fists up to deflect some blows, which I think is exactly what he has suggested that he's doing. To talk to you, Chandra. Interesting stuff. Thanks for that. San Francisco. Hello, Sophia.
Hi, Nick. Thanks for giving me a call. You know, during the President Trump's State of the Union, I was in Washington, D.C., and I saw something very peculiar. I see that they start to build something called an Art de la Trump, similar to what Napoleon did in Paris.
Yeah.
And it dawned on me, Donald Trump has no intention of being a peace president, but a man of peace. He's going to be a man of war, because that's how he's going to stay in power past 2028 and cancel the elections. That's the plan.
Yep.
And because the American people always rally around the leader when there's a war, regardless.
Well, initially, yes. But then after a while, they get sick of the killing and they wonder why exactly we are doing this. And then Country Joe and the Fish write a song about it.
Well, you know, Donald Trump, you know, whether you love him or hate him, you know, he's very much a political animal. And if he sees something is not working, he's going to pull it from that and go to another place to attack. Because I guarantee you, he has Cuba in the crosshairs. And there's a lot of Cubans in Florida. It's very popular with that. But the bottom line is this, and I think you're right on this, he has no intention of leaving office. Oh. He's going to keep the wars going.
You don't build a ballroom and then leave it to some radical communist Marxist president who might come after. Yes, quite right. That's been my thought. I've been expressing out loud for quite a while. He is not leaving. Thanks a lot, Sophia. 0345-6060-973. Still to come on this program, we're going to be talking to Simon Marks, our Washington correspondent, who will try to pick much of this for us. But after the break, there have been calls from business leaders to Keir Starmer to abandon net zero. We'll be talking about that after these updates from the new with these news updates is what I'm trying to say with Tim Daly.
Cypriot media is reporting an explosion heard at an RAF base on the island tonight was caused by a drone. It's believed to have fallen to earth at Akrotiri, which is one of two British facilities there. Both British bases on Cyprus are classified as being on UK sovereign territory. LBC has contacted the Ministry of Defence for a comment. Earlier this evening, Sir Keir Starmer announced he was giving the US permission to use British bases to attack missile sites and silos in Iran. During a pre-recorded statement, he said the action was the best way to prevent the situation in the Middle East from spiralling further. LBC weather, wet and windy for Northern Ireland and much of Scotland overnight. Those conditions will eventually spread to Western England and Wales. Clear spells elsewhere with lows of around 7 degrees.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the LBC app.
Tackle that laundry pile with Hotpoint washing machines available at AO. Use Fabric Care Tech for a gentler wash and keeping your favourite clothes lasting longer. Plus, we'll deliver and install them when it suits you. Hotpoint's trusted appliances from the UK's most trusted electrical retailer. Shop now at AO.com. Comparison with same model without Fabric Care feature. Verify trust at AO.com/trust and hotpoint.co.uk/trustpilot.
At AJ Bell, we believe investing is for everyone.
even people who know nothing about investing. Like Keith, who thought dividends were a boy band. Jessica, who thought compound interest was a prison dating app. And Sue thought FTSE 100 was a bit of under-the-table fun, which surprised her accountant.
Oh, no.
If we can make investing feel good for them, it's no wonder Which have recommended us 7 years running. AJ Bell, feel good investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
Leading Britain's conversation. Nick Abbott. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Keir Starmer has been warned not to hand Brussels a blank cheque over net zero rules, which threaten to undermine British business. The Prime Minister has been urged by his own MPs to put the brakes on negotiations with the European Union, which they say could have a damaging impact on energy-intensive industries in the UK. In a letter to Downing Street, MPs warned British firms will be placed at a significant disadvantage if they're forced to pay additional costs on goods sold abroad, which their international competitors are not subject to. Last month, Starmer claimed that the UK was no longer the Britain of the Brexit years and argued that Britain must align itself more closely with the EU single market. Let's talk about this with Donica McCarthy. Donica is Director of the Climate Media Coalition and joins us on the line now. Hello, Donica.
Good evening, Nick.
So what do you make of this?
Well, I suppose the MPs are right that if there's a bad deal done, that's not a good idea. But what the Telegraph article didn't point out was that from the 1st of January this year, the European Union introduced a tax on its border called a carbon border adjustment mechanism, which all British high-intensity users have to pay if they're exporting goods into the European Union. And what this negotiation is trying to do is to actually get rid of that so that we become part of the European Union carbon border adjustment system, and that actually we can then trade without this barrier with our fellow European partners, which is obviously our biggest market.
The carbon border adjustment mechanism, how does that work?
Yeah, basically what the European Union was saying is that their big energy users said to the European Union, look, you're putting a market-based carbon tax on our business, on our energy usage. And that means that companies could move to China, India, etc., and move the jobs there where they're not having to pay that tax. So what the European Union did in response to that was, OK, if we are importing goods from high-polluting countries such as Vietnam or China, they will have to pay a carbon tax on the border of the European Union. And that is now applying to British goods from the 1st of January. It will cost around £800 million a year unless we are within the mechanism. And that's what the government is trying to negotiate.
So being within the mechanism, is that just a function of being a member of the European Union or having signed a deal with the European Union? It has got nothing to do with the actual amount of carbon that your business creates.
No, we couldn't join the European Union in this negotiation because of Brexit. But what it does mean, we can join their carbon trading system. And that would mean that we're then within the border of that system and we would not have to pay the £800 million a year that we are currently scheduled to spend. If the government is successful in this negotiation and getting us within the system, that would save our big energy users around £8 billion over the next decade.
Right. Our big energy users would be what? Chemicals companies, things like that?
Yeah, the sector that applies to are cement, steel, aluminium, fertilizer, electricity and hydrogen. The big boys, the big polluters.
Right. Are they not in a position to be able to afford to pay?
Well, what they're saying is that it would put them at a competitive disadvantage. In other words, if they have to spend £800 million on a carbon tax exporting their goods to the European Union, their customers in the European Union are likely to buy their goods from other nations in the European Union rather than from Britain. And that's why the government is seeking to make sure that we have a level playing field and that our companies can compete across Europe without that £800 million impediment.
Right. What if we have, as is the case in many industries in this country, well, and abroad, we have essentially offshored our pollution. We don't build things that are highly polluting now. We've tasked China with doing that. So we can burnish our eco-credentials while creating the same amount of pollution just in another country.
which is exactly what the carbon border mechanism seeks to address. It's actually a really positive step in the right direction. Rather than eliminating carbon taxes, which encourage businesses to become cleaner and to eliminate their carbon pollution, it actually makes sure there's a level playing field. And this carbon border adjustment mechanism, which is a really techie term, really is addressing the problem you've addressed. But there are other problems with the UK electricity system that I feel doesn't get mentioned enough. UK has the highest both consumer and business electricity costs in Europe, but our wholesale costs are not. Our wholesale costs are around 13th most expensive. The problem in the United Kingdom is that, for example, your electricity bill at home, Nick, two-thirds of it is not the cost of electricity. It's actually the profits for the national grid, which is privatised, which is owned by an oil dictatorship in the Middle East and an American private equity. There are £300 standing charges, £83 VAT. There's a £70 bad debt cover. There's an old coal tax, and there's the warmer health discount. This amounts to £1,100 on every household in Britain. It's utterly insane and makes green electricity more expensive for households and business to switch, when we should be encouraging them to do. Almost none of these levies are on gas, on the fossil fuel gas that we use in our households and in our business. They're all piled onto electricity, which is absolutely nuts. But the thing that really gets me is this £500 profit from corporate profits on our bills. £500. I think, did you know the National Grid was privatised?
It's all extremely complicated. Once you start talking about standing charges and adding the various taxes that go on that, I find it quite difficult to understand quite how they arrive at their sums. But I am aware that they are quite high.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I wrote an article for Byline Times last month, trying to analyse how our electricity bill is arrived at. It was an utter nightmare to write the article, to try and tease out where is all these costs coming from. I mean, but the point about the national grid is almost as big a scandal as the water industry, but it's not visible because we don't see the water polluted. They make £5 billion a year profit and are failing to build the grid that was needed. So over the last decade, they've made around £50 billion profit. That would have built the grid needed for the cheap, clean, green energy projects that are queuing up to get onto the grid and that we can't access to bring down our electricity bills. It's an absolute scandal.
Well, do you think that the two are perhaps connected, that they're making it as difficult as possible for us to go, essentially, to rid ourselves of this addiction to fossil fuel and use the constant and unending, and once you've got the kit, free power that comes from the sun and the wind, that they're doing everything in their power to stop us from moving to what is absolutely apparent and obviously a much better way of powering our lives?
Well, I mean, to be fair to both the former Tory government and to the Ed Miliband and current government, they are taking a lot of steps towards making production of green electricity, ramping it up, and have done so successfully. The problem is the privatised national grid, owned by the Gulf and US billionaires, has been siphoning off the profits just like the water industry, rather than investing in the infrastructure that Britain needs to access this huge bevy of green energy projects that are waiting to come on stream.
It's not in their interests, is it? It's not in the interests of the Gulf or US billionaires to allow people to put a solar panel on their roof and get essentially free electricity. So they and their political parties that are in their pay are going to do everything they can and are doing everything they can to slow it down at the very least and stop it preferably.
I don't know if the owners of the national grid are doing it because of wanting us to keep us addicted to global fossil fuel markets, but I do believe that the 38% margin of profit that they're making is actually a scandal as great as the raid on taxpayers' investment in Thames Water, but it's not as visible. The media doesn't cover it. And actually, interestingly, I mean, I'm a director of the Climate Media Coalition. I deal almost every day with misinformation coming out from the Telegraph. They've just replaced Brexit with net zero. Mm. And very ironically, almost the same ownership structure applies to the Telegraph as applies to the National Grid. It is also owned jointly by a Gulf oil dictatorship and US billionaires. What are we doing in Britain to actually, we've outsourced our energy infrastructure and we've outsourced our national media infrastructure, and the British consumer pays the price and the climate.
So are we locked into a deal with the Gulf and US billionaires that we can't get out of? Because it seems like one of the biggest political wins, certainly in recent memory, if people could knock £1,000 off our energy bills.
Yeah, I mean, the challenge there is how do you... it is easier to take the water companies into ownership after the Tories sold them off because they're losing money. It's more costly to the taxpayer to buy back in the National Grid that the Tories sold off because it's such a money cow. And that's the problem. So what we could do there would require Ofgem to rejig the contracts so they weren't making this huge profit, so then the government could buy back and bring it in-house and save consumers. That £500 per consumer household that we're paying in profits to the privatised energy industries. But we could also do, it's even easier to do something about standing charges. I don't know about you, Nick, but I see standing charges as a poll tax on poorer households. It is crazy that an elderly pensioner, lady, widower, living in a small flat in Peckham is paying the same £300 standing charge as Rishi Sunak with his multi-million pound electric heated swimming pool. That does not make sense to me in a fair society.
So why isn't the Labour government doing something about this then? I mean, at least bringing it to our attention.
Well, I would argue that the media is failing in its job. How many people know the information I've just provided to you, that actually £1,100 of their energy bill is levies, most of which are not to do with environment, but are other levies rather than the cost of electricity. The media needs to step up and highlight to the public this problem, but the government is doing something, is taking a first step. They are removing the social levy that was used to invest in insulation for poor people's houses, and the old legacy green tariffs from the early noughties are being moved on from the bills onto taxpayer. And from April, there will be an 8% cut in energy bills for the UK public after compared to under the Tories. I think that's a good step, but I think it's only the first step of many that it needs to take over the next 3 years to remove these ridiculous levies from households, especially poorer households, and from businesses, so we can make the switch from dirty gas to clean electricity.
Well, so what do you make of the politicians, thinking from Reform particularly, who say that the reason that our electricity prices are so very high is because of net stupid zero, in their words, and the push to green energy?
Well, at the risk of becoming a repeating record, who is funding Reform? You know, it's insane. We have a system that allows billionaires and millionaires to buy our political parties. It's got to stop. £9 million from a billionaire who lives in Thailand, given to Reform. How many oil interests are pouring money into our political parties? It's got to stop. We need to clean up our politics. And I think the thing about Richard Tyson is extraordinary. Richard Tyson is proposing a tax on green electricity. I call it the Tice tax, and I wish the Reform voters knew about this. He's proposing a tax on green electricity, which is the cheapest energy, and he wants us to switch to new gas, which is £143 per megawatt, compared to £82 for new offshore wind, and he wants us to switch to nuclear, which I think you might be in favour as well. But nuclear is around £150 per megawatt. It's frighteningly expensive. So what Richard Tice is proposing, Reform is proposing, is tax on green electricity, which is now nearly 50% of our energy bills at home. And he wants us to switch to the most expensive new form of electricity. Why? Because of who's funding them.
Very good, if not slightly depressing, talking to you, Donica.
Well, what I think the positive thing, Nick, is there are solutions. That's what I'm excited about. I want to get this information out to the public to know that their energy bill is not high because of green energy. It's because of all these dam levies and profiteering by the privatised national grid. We can do something about that.
Very good to talk to you, Donica. Thanks so much for that. Donica McCarthy, Director of the Climate Media Coalition. Now, still to come, Simon Marks will join us from America. I should just tell you that we have had a response from the Ministry of Defence about that suspected drone attack on the RAF Akrotiri in Cyprus. They said, our force protection in the region is at the highest level and the base has responded to defend our people. This is a live situation and further information will be provided in due course. We can, though, confirm that there were no casualties. Right, short break. And then Simon Marks.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, James Hansen.
At 3, the Catholic priest quitting the church over celibacy. At 2, are you being attracted to the Green Party? But first, is Starmer right to let the US use British bases to bomb Iran?
James Hansen. At 1, listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
At Lloyds, we love that moment a dream becomes a reality. Like for Rob, he's in the supermarket when his phone bleeps. It's his daughter. She's in Manchester, at uni. The message is short. She's happy. And just like that, Rob knows every penny he invested and saved was worth it. He texts her back. Heart emoji. At Lloyds, we've been asking the nation about their dreams. That's how we know Rob's story and thousands of others just like it. We've been backing the nation's aspirations for 250 years. So when it's time to realise your dreams, we're ready when you are. Bank on Lloyds.
Do you dream of a drive where every traffic light is green? Or perfectly parking into the last space at first attempt? Well, here's to driving the dream. For a limited time, get an extra £1,000 off selected Honda models. And that's on top of our current offers. Visit your Honda retailer and order between February 13th and 9th of March. Honda, the power of dreams. Selected Honda models registered by 31st March 2026. Retail customers only. T's and C's apply. Visit honda.co.uk or your local Honda retailer.
When I wanted to trade overseas, but couldn't get the finance I needed.
When I wanted to increase my international sales.
When I needed working capital to fulfil a huge contract.
When I needed export insurance in case my buyer couldn't pay.
When you're ready to do business overseas, we'll help you export with confidence. With UK government-backed trade finance and support from regional export finance managers, we're backing your business. Visit ukexportfinance.gov.uk to find out how.
This is LBC with Nick Abbott.
Simon Marks is LBC's Washington correspondent, and he joins us from there on the line now. Hello, Simon.
Hello, Nick.
So, what are the developments?
Well, the developments are that at the end of a weekend where we barely saw President Trump, because we hadn't seen him at all after that 2:30 in the morning address on Saturday when he announced the start of major combat operations in Iran, he has returned to the White House here in Washington from Mar-a-Lago. Remember that he authorized the airstrikes on Iran in concert with the Israeli military from a thrown-together situation room on the grounds of his Mar-a-Lago resort late on Friday night and into Saturday morning. But before he left Mar-a-Lago, he issued a new video in which, to begin with, he noted the first three American fatalities in this conflict.
Earlier today, CENTCOM shared the news that three U.S. military service members have been killed in action. As one nation, we grieve for the true American patriots who have made the ultimate sacrifice for our nation.
And then in comments that I think are going to unnerve many Americans, particularly those with family members serving in the military in the region, he warned families all over this country that there are going to be more American deaths to come.
Sadly, there will likely be more. Before it ends, that's the way it is. Likely be more, but we'll do everything possible where that won't be the case.
And he insisted that the war to unseat the government in Iran is both right and justified and is going to continue.
These actions are right and they are necessary to ensure that Americans will never have to face a radical, bloodthirsty terrorist regime armed with nuclear weapons and lots of threats.
But there was still absolutely nothing in there to explain what the end game plan is here. I mean, earlier in comments to American journalists, and he gave telephone interviews to a handful of them from Mar-a-Lago earlier in the day, he told one that this conflict could go on for as long as a month. He also indicated that he's willing to talk to the new provisional rulers of the Iranian regime. He said that they have been in touch, they want to talk, and I'm ready to talk to them. He said, so I will be talking to them. They should have done it sooner, which is extraordinary given the fact that until last Thursday, American and Iranian negotiators were in Geneva absolutely talking to one another. But he also hasn't squared any of this with his repeated efforts tonight to urge the Iranian people to rise up and finish the job of overthrowing the regime. So on the one hand, he's open to the possibility of talks with them, which raises, you know, the question of whether, as you and I discussed last night, he's willing to do a kind of a Venezuela-style deal where he satisfies himself with an Iranian government that is simply not led by the supreme leader following the supreme leader's killing on Saturday, in exchange perhaps for access to Iran's oil, or is he calling for the Iranian people to take tremendous risks in going out onto the streets and trying to overthrow an Iranian government and its Revolutionary Guard that already earlier this year brutally killed tens of thousands of Iranian demonstrators that is now going for broke in its own efforts to remain in control of the country that it has brutally ruled since 1979. So, I mean, you can put your penny in the slot and anything can come out of the president's mouth at the moment in terms of what his strategy, and that is far too grand a word to describe what is taking place here, might be towards the future of this conflict. And we're now all of us, including the UK military, but every country in the region, completely at his whim.
Yes, I wonder if he's warning Americans to expect more deaths, because there's been reports that America is actually running out of the kind of missiles that they are firing in order to intercept the missiles that are coming out of Iran.
Well, that warning was publicly voiced last week by one of President Trump's close mates, Tucker Carlson, the former Fox News host, a MAGA sympathizer, founder member of the America First movement, who in his podcast last week was telling Americans that because the country didn't have any munitions, or enough munitions, and couldn't replace them quickly enough, and that's partly because, of course, he's critical of the number of armaments that the United States has given to Ukraine, it's impossible for the United States to engage in a long, drawn-out conflict in Iran. Now, today, Mr. Carlson, who has been very critical of the idea of going into Iran, had a telephone conversation with an ABC News anchor and told that ABC News reporter that he believes that President Trump's military intervention in Iran is absolutely disgusting and evil. And he is one of many prominent figures within the America First MAGA community that have come out this weekend and flayed President Trump, accusing him of complete betrayal because of the manner in which which he has U-turned spectacularly on his presidential election campaign pledge of not getting American servicemen and women entangled in forever wars, particularly in the Middle East or anywhere else in far-off lands about which the American public does not feel particularly strongly. Now, you know, you could argue, as he did, that the military action in Venezuela back in January sort of fell in line with his national security strategy, which is all about the Western Hemisphere is ours, we're the dominant power in the Western Hemisphere. You know, is he even loosely talking on Friday about the possibility of a friendly takeover of Cuba? But to advance that argument about Iran, claiming that Iran was 2 weeks away from acquiring a nuclear weapon, when even the White House's own website still insists that last July the United States completely obliterated Iran's nuclear capabilities, is quite a stretch for an American president who is looking at some pretty grim polling numbers about this military adventurism in Iran.
Yes, well, I've been telling you the bad news that you're not going to have midterm elections, that those will be cancelled. Now, this is probably the very thing that he is looking to use as an excuse to declare a state of emergency, and the election's going to be cancelled for your safety.
Well, of course, the nice thing for him about all of this is that any possibility, any eventuality is possible here. Were this to go right, I mean, this game of geopolitical 52-card pickup in which his government is now engaged, and the brute power of the American and Israeli militaries somehow dislodges the Iranian regime, and there is a Pollyanna moment in which Iranian demonstrators and the families of those people killed earlier this year, and ordinary Iranian civilians who have been celebrating the Supreme Leader's dispatch, suddenly come to terms with the security forces and the Revolutionary Guard and find a way of putting together a new democratic or somewhat democratic disposition in Iran, then President Trump, of course, will be able to claim once again that he was justified in winning the FIFA World Peace Prize. But if it doesn't work out and we find ourselves in the middle of a quagmire in the Middle East, it can certainly play into any particular set of circumstances that he wants to put it together as we head towards those midterm elections. Whereas, I say, these polling numbers on Iran are absolutely grim. Numbers in a Reuters Ipsos survey that has been taken over the weekend shows that only 1 in 4 Americans approves of the U.S. strikes, and one Republican voter in 4 believes that President Donald Trump is too willing to use military force. Those military reflexes being rejected by one Republican voter in 4. Now, you could ask yourself, why it isn't more than that?
And the polling was taken before the news of the dead military personnel, of course.
Yes, that's correct. Absolutely.
Simon, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. That's Simon Marks, LBC's Washington correspondent. Now, if you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinion. They are both free, as in no cost to you, the consumer, from your app store. I'll be back at 10, Friday, Saturday, Sunday night at 4. It's Ian Payne, but first, here's James Hansen.
Thank you, Nick. Good morning. Coming up, a Catholic priest says he has quit the church because it is too hard to stay celibate. At 3 this morning, are you or have you ever been celibate? And if you're not sexually active at the moment, do you miss it? Plus, fresh from their victory in the Gorton and Denton by-election, the Green Party's membership has now passed 200,000. At 2 this morning, are you going green? But first up, the Prime Minister says the UK has agreed to a US request to use British bases to attack Iranian missile sites. My question to you this hour, is Starmer right to allow Trump to use British bases to strike Iran? 0345 6060 973 is the number. Call me now.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock.
The Ministry of Defence has confirmed British armed forces have been responding to a suspected drone strike at an RAF base on Cyprus. It says the alarm was raised at around midnight local time, although there were no casualties at RAF Akrotiri. The MOD is also pointing out additional resources have been moved to the UK's two bases on Cyprus since the US and Israel began attacking Iran. Tom Cleaver at the Cyprus Mail has been telling LBC the British presence on the island remains significant.
West of Limassol, which is the second largest city in Cyprus, there's a sort of peninsula which juts out southwards, and that entire peninsula belongs to the United Kingdom. East of Larnaca, between Larnaca and Ayanaba, the popular tourist destination, there's another base called Vegelia, which again is sovereign British territory, and it takes up a fair chunk of the island. In fact, you can't drive from Larnaca to Ayanaba without driving through British territory.
The Prime Minister has announced he will allow the US to use British military facilities to strike missile launch sites inside Iran. Sir Keir Starmer says the UK took a deliberate decision to stay out of the US-Israeli military action, but a change is now needed. Sir Mark Lyle Grant is a former British ambassador to the United Nations. He's been telling LBC the government could be accused of being slow to act.
Personally, I think one could have made a legal case to allow America to use Diego Garcia in an offensive operation from the start. But, you know, clearly the government's legal advice was that wasn't possible. But that advice has obviously changed in the last 24 hours.
The president of Iran says he and